If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Ooga shaka, ooga, ooga, ooga shaka, ooga, ooga, ooga shaka. I can't stop this feeling.
Jesus.
It's Patrick's birthday. Yes, it's a new CU podcast for May 9th.
Help.
Alongside Ian Ferguson, I'm Pat Country. I can't keep the cadence going. We have a nice podcast for you. We'll be discussing a lot of topics tonight, ranging from modern gaming news and events going on, retro gaming stuff going on. Another game wheel is around. We'll also be talking about the best movie of all time, possibly, Captain America Civil War, and your Q&A. What's going on, Ian?
Not much. I just got back from a trip home to
Buffalo. Birthday.
Well, yeah, happy birthday. I already wished you happy birthday like three times today. Got back from my trip to Buffalo. I did a convention called LittleCon 3 in Buffalo, and it was a lot of fun. Took a trip up to Toronto, hung out with some friends, and that was really good, too. Found out that I'm really bad at relaxing on vacations, so I kind of came back.
Is that something you ever want to discover, that you can't relax on vacation? Because isn't that the whole point of a vacation, is to relax?
Yeah, but, I mean, I've got to be honest with you. Over the years, I've found that, let's say I'm taking, like, a 7 or 8 day vacation. There's probably, like, 3 days near the beginning where, like, I'm relaxed. And then I spend the rest of the vacation dreading the vacation being over.
So it's like summer vacation when you're a kid. Well, as soon as it hit August 1st, you're like, oh, shit, we're 4 weeks away from school.
Yeah.
So you can't enjoy it. You just dread it.
Yep.
Like, June is great, and most of July when you're a kid is fantastic.
Yes.
Like, probably the peak of the summer is, like, 4th of July,
uh-huh.
Which still, mentally, in my head, whenever it hits 4th of July, I'm like, oh, this is the happiest I'm ever going to be. I still hate August because of the dread I would feel going back to my Catholic grade school as a kid.
Yeah, the second half of August was the absolute worst.
Whenever you saw that those Disney Afternoon commercials come on, it's getting closer. It's 3 weeks away, which meant that's when school was starting.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, fuck the new Disney Afternoon, because that means I got to sit through awful geometry or whatever. Anyway.
So, that's what my vacations are like. But, there were a lot of fun moments. Especially in Toronto, and like I said, the convention was good, and seeing family and friends was good. But I don't know how to relax anymore at all, so that's kind of upsetting.
That's always good to discover.
Yeah,
especially as we're rocketing towards middle age. Real quick, the book is in its 14th proof for the physical version. You can still order at ultimatenes.com. Pre-order the digital one's done because the problem is all these shadow developers and hidden developers.
Yeah.
So I've probably updated in the past, 3 weeks, about over 100 NES developers. I figured, oh, let's double check some of these.
Right.
Especially a lot of the ones where a lot of the computer ports, where I'd say 95% of the computer game ports were not done by the company that originally did it on the computer.
No.
For example, like King's Quest V. But a few did. Like Mule. It sounds like they did theirs.
Right.
And I think Bard's Tale didn't. But tracking down some of like those developers,
I think Cybernator was too. I think it was the same one guy, perhaps.
Okay, Cybernator was not a game on the NES. Yeah. Cybernoid,
Cyber.
Ian's making up names of games that aren't an Ultimate Nintendo Guide to the NES. Cyberball,
Cyber, whatever that shit is, right here.
Cybernoid. Oh.
Okay, fine. Cybernoid.
Okay. Well, hopefully I caught that one, but or you did. But so that's done, and it was my birthday today. I went with Frank to the Padres game on Friday. Saw the Mets lose. We got our faces up on the big screen. You see me tweet that up?
Yes.
I thought that was funny. I felt like tweeting out the picture I took of it to the Padres, so it'd be like a scoreboard inception where it kept going in. But I didn't feel like that. I was going to be too clever for the ballpark. And then we saw Civil War on Saturday, which we'll get into. And then I'm going away to Norway. Retro Spill Messen, book your tickets now if you haven't. Norway on Wednesday, and for that event is this weekend, May 14th and 15th. And I shot two NES Punk videos back to back a week and a half ago, and that was exhausting. And I still have to edit them, so that'll be fun. But that's going to come in May. For sure. And then me and Ian will be end of June, or at least only me for now. Ooh, going to too many games.
Yeah, nope.
Ian's not going, but he's going.
I'm a big question mark right now.
So
announce me, Ryan. Jesus.
So we got a couple of sponsors. You take the first one, Ian. I'll take the second.
Oh, fine. Encroaching on my territory.
Your territory?
Embraceware. Hey guys, Jerry here from Embraceware. We have a new game coming soon, which is named Wii Man Sniper. If you would like to be notified when the game is released, enter your email address at www.weeman.com. It'll be available on iOS, Android, Mac, and PC. As always, you can get a sneak peek of what we're working on by checking us out on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We're at /Embraceware on each.
New to the web, but not new to the game, GeekMixology.com is an up-and-coming place where vodka meets video games. At GeekMixology, you will find creative cocktails made by experienced mixologists and diehard gamers. We are not only fans of the retro community, but contributors as well. Please stop by our little spot on the web and stay tuned for new videos, drink recipes, and upcoming events. We at Geek Mixology are huge fans of the CU podcast, and thank you for being a sponsor as well. It's a little hard to say Geek Mixology, but I got through it. So we're going to start off with probably the biggest gaming news the past week. By the way, I did a solo CU podcast, and it was interesting seeing everyone give their questions and comments about how they thought I murdered you.
Mm-hmm. I saw.
it was very heartfelt, that their love for you, conveyed through how I probably murdered you.
Well, someone also said that they hoped I had stopped breathing and died. So,
for real? Yeah, that wasn't a cute one. That was just a scary one?
Yeah. There was a few that were quite interesting.
But the biggest gaming news was probably the Battlefield 1 trailer that came out.
It's not a trailer. Well, it was an engine, and then there was some... They showed an engine, but the engine didn't show what the game was actually really going to be like. What happened was they leaked... a store display was leaked, mm-hmm. and clearly showed a Zeppelin crashing, a trench club... In the guy's hand, and I mean, what's pretty easy to ascertain from this, and I think this is actually pretty cool. I don't play a lot of these types of games. We're looking at probably a World War I themed shooter called Battlefield 1.
Yeah, but so it's an announcement trailer, whatever you want to call it. Either way, we're not 100% positive that that'll be all the gameplay footage, but it's using the engine at least to render that shit out.
Sure, they just wanted to show off the graphics. Basically what that was.
And so why I'm interested in this, and I went over the prior week by myself why the overwhelming negative reaction to modern, to Call of Duty Infinite Warfare, because all of a sudden now it's a space game. This is back to the basics, and there is that diehard audience that doesn't want to go into space that loves both the Battlefield series and Call of Duty. They want it to be just sniper rifles, machine guns, tanks.
Right.
You know, bombers. Like, that's what I want. And so... World War One is where a lot of that stuff first came to pass. Machine guns, aerial dogfighting, tanks. World War One was the first big conflict using all that stuff. The first modern warfare, which is why Battlefield said we're going back to the basics. So it's risky to do that just because World War One, for some weird reason, is not really touched upon at all in popular culture ever. There's rarely any movies made about World War One.
Correct.
They had that Spielberg one that came out a few years ago about the horse. Before that, I can't even think of one that came out.
No, it's practically untouched in terms of video games and a lot of media.
Sure.
Which is not to say that there aren't books and history written about it. Obviously, there is. But in terms of popular media, it's not particularly... done. So what's interesting to me about this is there was a huge backlash early on, like I'd say early 360, when Modern Warfare came out and Battlefield started moving into the modern era. People found it refreshing because they were getting sick and tired of constant World War II shooters. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, when Call of Duty did World at War, everyone was like, what the fuck? You just did Modern Warfare and that was great, and now we're already going back to World War II. But with each push into the future that Call of Duty has done, it's lost a lot of people because you have started to, whether it's your theme or not, whether you like it or not, they're encroaching on territory that's already being done, which is space and sci-fi. So you're losing people who want something grounded in some sort of realism.
Yeah, so when they remember less than 2 years ago, you had the Advanced Warfare come out with Kevin Spacey. That was like November of 2014. And that was already taking the jump to new technology with like
exosuits, basically.
Exosuits. Basically, you're playing Unreal Tournament at that point. If you can do these huge jumps and use all these, you know, grappling hooks and things like that. And just like, okay, yeah, there's a market for that maybe, but those other games, you can get that experience.
Right, exactly.
So then why put it in our game? Why not keep it pure? Why not say, okay, we have drone strikes and things like that, stuff that still exists now and it's modern, but now they're going 20 years in the future or 30 or 40 years, and that to me was even a stretch. But now to go 100 years in the future or more, and where it's like, okay, now this is Star Citizen. This is literally now going to become what Star Citizen's trying to do, or at the very least, Elite Dangerous. This Elite takes place in our universe, in our galaxy, like with Earth, but now we're just going to add the first-person shooter elements to it. It's just a weird decision. Now, obviously, it has nothing to do with Battlefield, but it just shows how two companies that both have the biggest first-person shooters are going in opposite directions. And we're going to see how it plays out in the fall, because Battlefield comes out, I believe, in October, and Modern Warfare is a month afterwards.
Infinite Warfare.
Infinite Warfare. Used to be Modern. Now it's, you know, Star Trek Warfare is coming out. But I'm excited, again, because World War One is not really touched upon. It was brutal. Absolutely brutal when you think about World War One and the chemical weapons. The mustard gas was what it's famous for. They use other stuff though besides that, but mustard gas is a big one that was horrific. That's why it was banned after World War One, using that stuff. Trench warfare, you hear the term, but just literally two sides, not even, I don't know, 30 yards apart,
right,
40 yards, dig a trench. Have both your sides in there and just try to shoot each other for weeks on end with no one gaining ground. Or when you try to gain ground and try to, you get mowed down by machine gun fire. You know, it's just horrific, just like awful. So it was at a time when they were transitioning from, you know, older weapons and older military tactics to new ones with newer warfare, and trying to come to terms with, okay, now we got to deal with machine guns. Now we got to deal with these things called tanks. Which before, you know, mechanized warfare didn't exist. You know, dogfighting.
Right.
Using rudimentary bombers to attack enemies, and even using, you know, balloons to try to do recon, stuff like that. So it's using all the same strategies used in modern warfare, but this is the first time it was used. So
yeah. And it could create some interesting gameplay mechanics. If they're smart, they're not just going to reskin the basic weapon archetypes. I want things to fire slower. I want things to be harder to control. I mean, they have a chance to make something, strangely, I mean, very unique by setting it so far in the past.
Yeah, and you'll have melee combat probably. Like you said, it was, I believe it's the Harlem Hellfighter guy in the cover with a pistol and the trench club. So there's probably going to be some trench combat going on where, you know, you have to depend upon your either bayonet or a knife or your club or mace to, you know, get by. So that's interesting to me. Obviously, I love dogfighting games, and this was the first time it was done. The Red Baron's most likely going to be in the game.
Do you think we'll get Snoopy?
Ian, that'll probably be DLC.
Oh, okay.
That'll be the CU podcast pre-order pack.
Snoopy, the
order
World
now
World
play,
flying
ace. Order now and play as Snoopy. You know, so you're going to have that. You're going to have battleships, or primitive battleships and primitive bombers. And even though, what, there was there's going to be horses in the game they revealed. You can have, you know, this is when horses were getting phased out of warfare. So you're going to have horses. You say you can bring a horse to a tank fight. That's interesting to me. Just to see the different strategies you'll have with trying to stick with the more, I guess, more freedom of using. Because remember, back then, tanks were not quick. They didn't move well. They were armored. You didn't have rocket launchers to take them down, but you could take them down. So you might want to use a horse and flank and, you know, do stuff with it. So I think this is going to be the real tail of the tape. If it sounds like, for the most part, that this was a great decision, because if you all the positive thumbs up for Battlefield 1 versus Infinite Warfare, where it's more thumbs down on the trailer than thumbs up, where people are like, what the hell did you do? You went way too far.
It hit a million thumbs down, I think.
Yeah. Those weren't all trolls. They're like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
With the Advanced Warfare, okay, we're with you there, maybe even, but now we're doing Elite Dangerous, basically. And it's like, we didn't ask for that. And it won't be as good as Elite Dangerous, that space combat. It can't. because that's all that game's focused on. Oh, this is, you know, oh, it's going to be like you're in a plane, but you're in space. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? It's not like that's not what the focus of the game is.
Sure.
So, well, our friend Tim Atwood.
I feel so bad for him. He must be sitting at home crying right now about this.
So, this is where the Incredible Hulk sad music walking away. He posted on Nintendo Age. It's not my favorite website, but it really is.
I thought it was your home away from home.
It, you know what? It's like a third cousin that you see like once every blue moon. You remember why? You like some things about him, but you don't like others.
There's always a dirty cot there for you, though.
But then you realize he might have stolen your car at one point. So he posted on Nintendo Age that he accomplished... He posted that he wanted to accomplish things by bringing up the fact that he had all these sealed games and the fact that he had 6 sealed state events that were left. And he posted a message that he accomplished it. And of course it was locked quickly after,
right.
After he posted. So he wanted to do a few things.
Well,
he brought up the fact that people on Nintendo Age were attacking him unnecessarily,
right.
Which they were, and they were just saying, you know, oh, you're just in this for yourself, blah blah blah, and I go back to the fact that like the one thread said, I guess old Atwood wasn't telling the truth, as the title of the thread, trying to expose him or something, and so he reiterated first a story about Mario Brothers arcade game that. They got offers for it online at $4,500 and another for $10,500. Didn't accept any of those offers because he didn't want to sell it to those people. He wanted to find the right buyer.
They were people with high buy it nows. They were people who were obviously going to flip this.
Yes. So he found someone that he knew just wanted for the collection and gave it to him for $1. And he said he loved seeing the look on their face.
Yeah, I would imagine.
And then he also stated, my rare games aren't listed for the money, rather to find a deserving person that will cherish the game. So obviously, people on Nintendo Age either didn't trust the guy or just, you know, jealous or whatever else, because they attacked him anyway and said, you're in this for yourself, you're in this to promote your games, blah, 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 even though obviously he hasn't been doing that.
No. If he wanted to do that, he would have done it years ago.
He sold the freaking Power Punch 2 since this point, a Bigfoot, and the poster.
Right.
Which he was kind enough to give Ian and I a poster of Stay Events coming soon.
Yes, that's going on the wall.
That's all he's done. So he obviously had ulterior motives, and he revealed them here.
He had accomplished 3 things. He this was unintended, but he was happy that he found this. The first thing that he accomplished was that he found people to help. Meaning, through all of this, he has found collectors that he can place his games with where he knows they will have good homes. The second thing he accomplished, and I think this is probably the most important one, is that he's shown people that, especially people within the sealed collecting community, that these games are not as rare as the gatekeepers quote would like you to think they are. That they are out there, that they are available, and your ability to get one is no longer, is no longer held by, yeah. by just a small cabal.
You're not beholden to people that want to basically control the prices on the market.
So they can, you know, feel like they have a big penis. And then the third one is fairly obvious. If you look at the first two, is he discovered who he won't help ever.
So people that attacked him. And he brought me up in the podcast in general. Being that through the podcast, we got out the list of games.
Right.
Well, most of it. There was a limit to YouTube with the amount, but I cut out the ones that are a little crappier. I left the good stuff, and they're like the 90% of the
right.
90% of the goodies that we went over about 3-4 weeks ago. So people know what he has. I can contact him, and then he can filter through himself if he wants to deal with people. Like, for example, maybe Ian wants a Clue Land at some point.
Yeah.
And then there's people he lists that one that he thinks was stalking him. And then Quest for NES talks shit about you behind your back. I think Quest for NES is a guy that talks shit about me in the forum a lot. That name sounds familiar. And a few other names that don't matter to me at all. And then someone says, Captain Warmonger seems to think the posters aren't collectible. Ask the two individuals that spent good money on the first one. They would disagree.
I already cherish mine.
You're going to just put that up on the wall next to the Bloodsport?
Did they come with certificates of authenticity, or do I potentially have a bootleg
You might
poster?
Have a bootleg Stadium Events coming soon
Tim.
Poster.
Come on, buddy.
Is it a first? Is it a second printing like Ninja Turtles comics?
How am I going to flip this, Tim?
Sure. So he basically exposed members of Nintendo Age for what they are, without even really trying to.
Yeah. Just by existing, having his collection,
by existing, by having a collection, and by trying to do good,
right,
in the hobby. He exposed people.
And that's the funny thing. By trying to do good, he made so many people angry. What a fucking world we live in.
Yep. It's really a shame, and I'll get into why more. It's a shame, because this is where the story just begins. So, someone then posted on Nintendo Age and got in touch with me about it, through Tim, about... He I guess through all this hoopla... Tim talked to someone on the forum. His name is Puppy Waffles. Oh, by the way, I forgot about this, but they banned Tim Atwood from Nintendo Age. One of the mods did.
Right.
By the way. Isn't that lovely?
Yes.
That's absolutely lovely.
That was my comment at the very beginning, was I bet you Tim's sitting at home right now crying over this.
We'll get back to that, but a forum where I did see a few comments saying we need a lot more Tim Atwoods on Nintendo Age, but apparently the moderators don't agree because they banned them. So we'll get back to that.
I really want waffles right now.
So Puppy Waffles. Puppy Waffles. How if you had waffles shaped like puppy faces?
That'd be great.
Kitten waffles.
Hmm.
Kickstarter, Ian. He posted that Tim had given him a Kirby's Adventure sealed. It's the French-English version. I believe it's the one I have. And it's not extremely rare by any means. You know, it probably doesn't go for a huge amount. I don't know, $50, $6. I don't know.
Who gives a shit?
It was a gift.
Yeah.
It was a gift. It was a nice gift.
Yep.
Tim didn't say, post it on Nintendo. He just said, okay, you want it? I probably got 40 of them. Yeah, have one. Yeah, why not? He didn't have to do it. He posted on Nintendo Age saying, hey, I just want to show that Tim sent me something. It was nice of him to do. And even said, please do not post your opinions about Tim's statements or anything else related. This is not a thread for you to complain about anything or justify why you disliked him or to tell me why you think a case of statements is stupid. So he basically said, oh, this is cool. And he had Tim sign the outside of, looks like, the plaster.
Right? Yeah.
Just a cool story.
So what bothered me so much about this, and we might be going in different directions here, but this is, I got so fucking disgusted over this. One of the moderators actually tried to say, basically, tone it down. It's not that great of a gift. It's not that rare, blah, 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 this, that, and the next thing. It's not like he gave you this or that. Completely overlooking the fact, basically reaffirming everything we've said, that these people are concerned about nothing but value. It's the gesture that mattered here.
Let's be fair. There was a moderator named B.A., who said, I love hearing stories of generosity. That's great stuff. But then, yeah, it got worse from there.
Right.
One person said an awful comment was like, well, that was like if Bill Gates gave you a random game.
That's the guy I'm talking about. He also went on he was the one who was poo-pooing the gift because it wasn't worth enough. And it's like, these people are so fucking blind. They failed to realize that to this person, it means everything because it was a kind gesture, it's one of their favorite games, and it's one that they've wanted. The value of it does not fucking matter. But to the person, the moderator who was complaining, yes, it was the value that mattered, and because it wasn't a high enough value, the gift therefore somehow lost its meaning.
Yeah. So, there's this moderator named Kevbot with a backwards 3.
Mm, neat.
So, it sounds like that's one of the guys that Tim had a problem with that was sort of coming after him.
Mm.
And he's a moderator on the site. So
that's impartial.
Yeah. So, it sounds like there was some fallout from this. It looks like there was some deleted messages or things... I don't know what's going on here. People on Nintendo Age, you can go after me if I'm not getting my story straight here totally, but it just sounds like there's a lot of tomfoolery going around here. Here's the issue. A lot of shenanigans. The issue is that you have people at Nintendo Age, moderators, are abusing power.
Yeah.
That's the only way you can say it. Not all the moderators, but some. When you don't, when
this
you
is a new thing, isn't it? Oh no, I'm sorry. No, wait, no, this has been not. Your problem forever.
No, that's yeah. not. You know, yeah, it's existed since you know forever when people were slandering me, libeling me in threads, and Myers like, it's fine, it's fair game. He's a public figure. Yeah, because that means you can libel me. Anyway, but you cannot or you should not have moderators getting when you moderate a website, you're supposed to be impartial,
right?
Like literally, like unless you're breaking the form rules, you shouldn't care.
Look at Albert from Atari Age. He very rarely dipped his toes into the whole Coleco Chameleon thing. Because Albert's a good guy. Love you, Albert.
So when you have moderators with their own agenda, or I'm not... Like I said, there's some nice ones. Some of them even contacted me, try to get me back into the fold at Nintendo Age. Mm-hmm. Which I think is cute. But, you know, whatever. They're trying to make nice, which right. is fine. But the fact of the matter is you have some moderators that are pushing their own agenda, or the agenda of their close friends on the site. Who are maybe making money off a lot of repros that they don't own the rights to, or maybe trying to control prototype markets, or do backdoor deals, and then people you know wash it, you know, that didn't happen. No, they're my friends. It doesn't matter. They can get away with it, you know, or things like that, or hoarding games. And oh well, they're my friends, so you know, we shouldn't call them out. But someone like Tim Atwood, though, who's doing something great for the community, he's the bad guy. So let's ban him, and we'll just lock threads, even saying he might be a decent guy. Who, by the way, didn't come onto Nintendo Age until people were attacking him originally.
Right.
Because he didn't post that he owned the Sealed Stadium events. Someone else did. It's just lovely. But the good news is that I have a feeling this got back to my pal Dane, who runs the site. And I think some of even the moderators are getting upset about
it. Some of the moderators, I think, are getting upset. And I think a lot of the community is. And this could only be good for Nintendo Age.
Absolutely. If they clean up their act and say, we want moderators that aren't going to be fucking snarky and posting threads and then close threads.
Yeah.
Don't fucking post in the thread.
Keep your mouth fucking shut. Talk about absolute cowardice. Comment in a thread that you disagree in and then lock it so that no one can respond back to your stupid fucking comment.
That's not how you're supposed to run a forum.
No.
The moderators are supposed to stay out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you want to do a rule, like, hey, maybe the moderators, if they want to comment, they can't then control what the hell happens to the thread.
Right.
They've given up their right to control what happens in the thread. So, the only reason I bring this up is because there was a point. This is, I didn't want to ever bring this up before, but I figured it was time. Why not? Because it was like 4 years ago. Where Dane wanted to make me an admin on the site, Nintendo Age. And I was going to help run the site and do stuff behind the scenes, or at least be more involved in the moderation of the site and that's when I had time, too, to do it. So I went to the moderators, said, hey, what do you think about Pat coming to help with the site? And guess what the mods voted for?
Your death?
Pretty much.
Stoning?
So, unfortunately, you know, I mean, he guess he runs the site democratically, but Nintendo Age mods decided that Pat's no good for the site. So, from there, it was a slow downward spiral.
You're a bad apple.
And I didn't bring it up till now because I figured it had nothing to do with it. But it just goes to show you that there's an agenda with the moderators. And I'm not saying if I was a moderator or admin on Nintendo Age, everything would have been, you know, candy and roses. But at least me and guys like Tim are on the same page. And there are a lot of people that are on Nintendo Age that are members that are afraid to speak up because they're afraid of moderators coming down on them or, you know, just ostracize them from the site. If you had more people like Tim as moderators or someone with my attitude more, it would be more balanced. But there is no balance overall. So, it is what it is for now, but hopefully it gets cleaned up.
I'll never ban you from my site, Tim. I don't have a site.
What was your site? What was your forum be, Ian? Just like a candy forum?
I have no fucking clue.
80s candy?
I don't know what to do with the fucking internet. Ubisoft has responded to division cheating, hacking, and exploit concerns. And I would like to start this segment by kind of rolling back some of my statements that I made previously when we covered this. Obviously, I want this game to be played fairly. Part of my problem has always been that Ubisoft seems to rush things out the door, and at this point they have a horrible track record for bugs and glitches in games. And what was really bothering me is this is a game that I actually enjoy playing, so I felt like initially it was kind of dumb for them to punish people for their mistakes. However, it is clearly stated that, you know, you're not allowed to use these exploits and things like that.
Controversial subject in the CU podcast. Meaning it almost came to an arm wrestling contest.
Yeah, almost. I'm sure that was a comment section I didn't even wade into. I'm sure it was very friendly towards me.
No, actually, a lot of people were saying, fuck you, Pat. Some people were disagreeing. It was actually pretty split.
Well, it comes down to, I still think Ubisoft is largely at fault for this. And they need to, you know, get their heads out of their asses with it. But I do want the game to play fairly, and like I said, part of that is because I really enjoy it. And one thing I was not considering was, this is a game that I have not really touched the Dark Zone. The Dark Zone is the PvP portion of the game. I've mostly done the cooperative portion where you play with other people. So to me, the exploiting to get the powerful armor, while lame, not necessarily something I'd want to do, I didn't see it as really, really hurting the experience of the game for anyone. Anyway, so Ubisoft has detailed what they are going to do. First thing is, they are implementing new programs to detect cheat engines. Now, this is not really going to affect, I don't believe, the console versions, because consoles are pretty much walled gardens. But this will help PC players. Cheat engines are things like auto aim or auto lock, basically, or auto shoot, where like if you cursor over an enemy or an enemy player, it will just automatically take the shot. Things that will greatly ruin the experience of even the best game for people who are playing. So they're going to implement that. People who are caught using these things, the ban used to be a mild 3 days. Now it's going to be 2 weeks for a first offense, and they say that it will always result in a permanent ban for a second offense, which I think is perfectly fantastic.
That's generous. Hell, I might say ban them on the first offense, but hey, okay, if you want to be the second one, fine.
And then they also stated that, you know, they kind of clarified what they mean by exploits and bugs. And exploits are, you know, basically when you constantly take advantage of a bug to for gain that will give you an unfair advantage in the game. Whereas they're saying that if you happen to stumble upon a bug naturally over the course of playing a game, obviously they're not going to punish you.
Sure.
So I like that Ubisoft has come out and clarified what they're going to do, taking a harsher stance, because I know that the game is dividing people, but I think they've got a good thing here, and they got to make sure it doesn't fall apart.
They also spotlighted something that I should have brought up in my defense when we had our disagreement about it, was that they cannot simulate how everyone experiences the game.
Sure.
Always players. So there's some bugs that make it through testing. You can't, if you bug test, you'll be there forever doing it.
Sure.
You can't predict every scenario for every sort of player.
Unless you put it on a cartridge.
Once you put on a cartridge, then it's totally bug-free, out the door. Can we go 3 months?
No.
Just 3 months now. We made it 2 months without it. It's like those accidents at work tallies.
Right. Exactly.
0 days now without mentioning Click a Chameleon. Thank you, Ian.
We really should get the chalkboard.
We were at like 63 days, I think. Asshole. Anyway, so they want to have more visibility about what are the bugs out there so that... If we discover the bug, we communicate it, then there's less of an excuse for you to do it.
Right,
like,
exactly.
This is a bug that'll get you suspended or in trouble. So I like that they're being upfront about that. And sanctions will be implemented for repeated abuse. Again, so if you do it one time and it's by accident, maybe you're curious, okay, that's fine. But if you see someone, you know, getting those, you know, weapon upgrades, whatever, like 8 times in a row, okay, you have a timeout. Come on.
Right.
Come on.
Come on.
Come on.
Come on.
Just work with me here a little bit.
Sit in the corner, face the wall.
Work with me here a little bit, people.
And to me, there is a little bit of admission of, you know, guilt on their part that they need to fix these issues, which is nice to see, a little humility.
Sure.
So, overall, I think it's all good things. I'm glad it's happening. Like I said, I think this is going to affect more on the PC side of things. But the whole bit on the exploits will certainly affect the Xbox One and PS4 versions in a positive way as well. And it will make the PvP segment of the game something that will, you know, be more enticing to players again.
So you're going
to
wait into that Dark Zone again?
I might try. I'm probably going to get fucking killed.
I think that's the YouTube comments, personally.
Oh, yeah. Boom. So kind of on the tail end of this, and I think this is the exact opposite thing of how you should handle this, and this I will stand behind. So Dark Souls 3 is out. Fantastic game, actually got me back into the series a bit. Dark Souls is an incredibly hard game. It's known for being brutally difficult. You die a lot. It's about learning patterns and learning just how the game plays and reacts, how you should read telegraphs and things like that. This is important because your equipment is going to be a very, very big part of your success in this game. Not just your reactions, but making sure that you have the proper equipment. The PC version is encountering some problems, however, where people are hacking their game data to gain more powerful equipment. Now, once again, I'm not going to be silly enough to look at this like I did the Division issue. While I may look at Dark Souls as a single-player game, it really isn't. People can invade your game and try to kill you, which obviously has penalties and setbacks to it. So this can really ruin, once again, the player-versus-player component of the game. Mm-hmm. Now, banning people's save data who are hacking their accounts, that's absolutely fair. That's great. I mean, you need to do that to keep the game in check. The problem is they're going totally off the deep end here, and they are banning people who receive these items, whether it's knowingly or not, which that's blaming the victim. So if someone comes into your game and gives you an item and you accept it and it turns out to be a hacked item, Namco Bandai reserves the right to ban you, regardless of whether or not you knew that it was a hacked item. This opens up a whole new world of griefing, where people can jump in and not even try to fight you. Now they're actively trying to get your account fucked. They mean, at this point, who wants to, if you're playing the PC version, who wants to accept an item from someone now knowing that your account and your progress may be destroyed?
It's like accepting stolen property, like you still can get busted for it.
Right. Yeah, so it's, I don't know, I feel like that's incredibly harsh.
Here, take this really awesome sword. Okay. Then you get banned.
And I don't know what they're implementing to kind of combat this, but I like I said, I do feel bad for, you know, people who are, you know, think they're getting a friendly gift from a stranger. At this point, the lesson here is the lesson in real life. Don't take candy from strangers. I mean, only take...
Don't go into that Dark Souls van.
Yeah. Only take, you know, stuff from people you trust.
I wonder if it's... I don't know. Are they having trouble tracking the actual people hacking the game? They're trying to go backwards and start with the people that have the... Maybe that's what... Maybe, like, all these hacked weapons are with these people, and they're going to start from there and then go backwards to find... It's really a strange stance to say, oh, we're going to ban these people that just took a cool weapon.
Well, yeah, you're not going after the cause, you're going after the effect, which is totally ass backwards.
Is there any way out of this?
Well, that's the thing. I'm sitting here trying to think of a way that they could conceivably what kind of system they could put in place, but I have no idea.
According to this article, it even says that it warned about taking candy from strangers. That's really funny.
Oh, really? I honestly did not even see that.
Okay. And a page on its knowledgeable site about the invalid game data message that some players are being presented with when logging in, the publisher has now said that the warning gives players ample time to take steps to correct it once they figure out the cause. This message is intended to inform end users that some external file modification of game save data, exploit or cheat/hack, or alterations of the game have been detected by the Dark Souls 3 server team, and that the end user's account profile has been flagged for further investigation. So it sounds like if you accept this shit, you will know in the game that something has been altered. That's what it sounds like.
That's not how I read into it. Well, is that your data will appear to them to be flagged, but it's not, you get the penalty warning when they've suspended your account. Unless you're inspecting your game data, which
it says this invalid game data message lets you know that something fucked up has happened to your file.
Yes, but that's after they've already noticed it and banned you. That's not something that you see when you log back in.
Well, this says it's been flagged for further investigation, so then maybe that means you can correct it or undo it. I don't know.
Either way, it's a mess.
Okay, according to this, again, this is what they put out. During the time that the warning message is displayed, the end user will have a chance to completely remove any such external files, mods, cheats, hacks, or delete their game save if alterations were performed to it or hacked items, equipment were obtained either as a direct cheat hack or via unknown gift from another player. So it sounds like you do have a warning. But, let's see.
How will they know? Well, I guess.
Well, so the problem is neither Bandai, Namco, nor developer From Software has given any indication about exactly what software is being flagged up by their systems. It may be restricted to the likes of a cheat engine, which in which case is great. So it sounds like there's some weird system in place, but it's not totally clear. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess, again, it comes down to trying to protect the gameplay experience of everyone, but you might be going too far in doing it.
Correct.
So, but it sounds like if you are playing Dark Souls, don't take candy from strangers. Keep backing up your data, maybe every hour or 2 hours at least, like your save. Have these cleans, you know, going back in case you have to delete your data. If you took someone's awesome shield that deflects gnome heads flying at you. I don't know anything about Dark Souls. but just back up your data and be careful.
No, Pat.
Pat doesn't know anything about modern games. I don't have fun playing games anymore. I will soon, though, because the book's just about done.
So, Sony, and I don't think this is necessarily a secret, but this is something definitely people did not a lot of people know about. I certainly didn't. Sony was basically prototyping a gaming system of sorts, a TV game system of sorts, as early as the early 1970s. And I gotta tell you, it's a looker. I mean, the thing's very kind of attractive in that 1970s way. It's
analog, baby.
Yeah, it's got a dial on the side, a big, fun, chunky dial that looks like it would be a lot of fun to turn. Some buttons on the front, and games would be on cards. To me, as far as I can tell, this looks like it would have been a sort of a trivia game machine. There are buttons underneath. There are three buttons underneath a red placard that are answer, and then a blue button that you press for proceed. So I'm assuming that this would be used for trivia, or you could probably do simple. You might be able to do simple other types of games with that sort of. With that sort of setup, and it's theorized that the scroll wheel would have been used to scroll through text or whatever's on screen. I don't know that this would necessarily be a huge game changer, but if it had taken off and become popular, could it have shaken up later things? Now, I find it hard to think that if this was really a trivia machine, it could have shaken things up too much. Sony is a bigger company than some of the other companies that were putting stuff out at the time, but I don't know that it would have shaken anything up for, say, Nintendo in the future when you're looking at just completely different sort of stuff. I mean, we're talking about, like, bar games versus Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, is this technically, like, a video game system? Like, how technical do you want to get about it? Okay. It's not like you go from a trivia game to all of a sudden Donkey Kong.
Right.
The next year. There was the Omni Entertainment System in the 70s. It was 8 tracks.
Mm-hmm.
It was a board game, though, but you use 8 tracks and you had buttons to answer, so it's not too far off from something like this, except you're not using a TV screen. So, it's very interesting. It's funny that they try to like contact Sony about this. They don't know anything about it. We have no idea.
And to me, that's the more interesting part. You know, why do we not know anything about this? Well, because video games weren't taken fucking seriously. I mean, you know, we're in an era where nailing down a precise release date for Super Mario Brothers is kind of agreed upon at this point, but it took years and years and years of research to do it. No one kept track of this stuff back then. This was not considered important. So, people who worked on this are long gone. I mean, did they even make documents of who worked on this? Who prototyped it? Who came up with the idea? How far along was it? Are these people alive? This was the early 70s. I mean, what were the age of the people who were working on it? So, this is why video game preservation currently is so important, is so that we have answers to these questions 50 years from now, when someone, you know, stumbles upon something that didn't receive a whole lot of press back in the day.
Sure. So this came from an article that featured pictures from the 2002 to 2005 Dreaming Creativity Exhibition. I guess that was in Japan. And I guess the founders of Honda and Sony were involved with this somehow, or
I believe they put on the show.
They put it on. Okay, so it sounds like they probably had it laying around. Oh, let's put out some of our stuff.
Right,
that's been laying around for 30 years. We don't know anything about it.
This looks cool, and it's in nice shape, so we're gonna put it out. Right. But unfortunately, we can't tell you a goddamn thing about it.
Like,
looks nice on a shelf.
There's a little placard that says. Thankfully, in English also, a prototype TV game machine. Then there's 3 sentences in Japanese that I don't know translate what it means, but it's probably like, yeah, this is what we had, you know, It would have trivia on cards, and that's it. But it probably doesn't function. They probably don't have any cards for it anymore.
No.
You know, they probably threw this together and said, oh, this could be a cool thing in the future. But that's as far as it got. You know, unless you find, of course, unless you find the engineers that put it together, you know, already 40 years ago. Well, it's an interesting piece of almost gaming history.
Right.
I guess you could say. It's not quite gaming history. All right. Well, this came to my attention. Remember that T-Scrat Facebook game wheel raffle
bullshit
thing that happened? And we said how, you know, it's basically gambling over state lines. It could be considered wire fraud.
You're breaking local raffle laws, most likely, not to mention interstate laws.
It's really what comes in interstate. Once you cross state lines, gambling is totally illegal.
Oh, yeah.
Once you cross state lines. So someone alerted me to the fact that there's been another scam that happened. And it was alerted and talked about on a YouTube post. Gamer Geek Nation, not a small channel, he's got 12,000 subscribers. His name is DVR, I guess. That's his name. So the group he's talking about, where I guess a lot of these take place, is called Gamers United. Retro and New Generation Game Wheel Wolves Den. Wolves Den.
Really? That's what they've called it? Wow, that's a great name to attach to something that already sounds shady as fuck.
So, in this video, DVR, that's his gentleman's name, I'm assuming he's a video game collector, he's talking about, I guess there's, these groups don't just have one game, it sounds like they have multiple ones, I guess at some point. So he did one called the Mega Omega, which, I don't even know how this, I mean, I kind of know how it works, where there's slots, raffle slots, you PayPal, you send them evidence, hey, I bought like 3 slots for whatever, $20 each. And then you do a randomizer and pick out the order of the people that submitted it. And then here's the winners. This person won this. And then, I guess in this case, like, there was 6 games in this raffle. And then the order went, the first person who got picked theirs. And, you know, you select like a draft. So the games featured here, all, you know, heavy hitters. Little Samson, DuckTales 2, Bubble Bobble 2, Bonk's Adventure, Flintstones Dinosaur Peak, Panic Restaurant, and Mighty Final Fight. So all these games are like, what, 200 or more? You're going with a lot. So you have people that want to get these games. Maybe they can't afford to spend the $800 on Little Samson or the $800 on Flintstones Dinosaur Peak, but a dollar and a dream. Or in this case, probably a lot more than a dollar. 10, 20. So DVR here talks about the fact that everyone sent the money. They spat out the winners. And he, I think, was the second place winner. So he chose Little Samson. Oh, by the way, the way they try to get around this is that you're not purchasing a raffle.
You're buying a picture.
You're buying a cheat code. 180 cheat codes at $20 each. And those cheat codes just happen to help you act as a raffle ticket on the side.
Well, it was like the previous one where you weren't paying to be in the raffle. You were literally there you were buying a JPEG.
Yeah.
You might get a chance to win something on the side as a consolation for buying this beautiful picture.
Because that'll hold up in a court.
Yeah.
So this gentleman DVR won this. There's this virtual dice roll. I'm not gonna get into it, but he won this. Little Samson. Oh, he was number one, whatever. And of course, all of a sudden, the individual running this particular raffle, PayPal account gets locked up. So all of a sudden, hey, I don't have the funds to send you any games. He may not even have the games. He probably didn't. It's a scam. So, should you be pissed if this happened to you? Yeah, you should be pissed. But you shouldn't be surprised.
Right, this is the equivalent of playing back alley dice.
This is the equivalent of shooting craps on the street, and someone comes up and mugs the game with a gun and says, give me your money. And it's like, well, you're pissed about it, but are you really shocked it happened?
Right.
Because it's not regulated. And that's what this comes back to. We can argue back and forth about whether you think it's legal to hold raffles because churches get away with it or charities do it. You can argue that, hey, it really is legit because you're not really buying a raffle ticket. You're buying a JPEG, blah, 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 blah. You want to argue that? That's fine. But you can't argue that this fucking shit is regulated.
Right.
Because it's not. And that's always the differentiator between gambling that I'm okay with and gambling that's not, because if it's not regulated, you're going to get fucked. You can get scammed easily, and here it happens.
Right.
And it happened before with the, we're raffling for an NWC cart that someone's nonplussed about opening out of the box. You know, it's like, people are greedy. People will want to take advantage of you. Especially in the collecting community, where people want to get ahead by, if they were using it as, well, I want to get Little Samson, I want to get Flintstones Dinosaur Peak, they're going to prey upon you.
Yes.
Because then it becomes, it's not just money, it's this whole system of prestige, and I want to build myself up. So they're preying upon your inherent collecting nature, and the fact that you want to sort of do your best to get all those games. So it's like this perfect storm of being able to scam people at that point. And that's what bothers me about it.
Yeah.
But will it stop it? No. It'll still happen. People will still do this. Because for most people say, oh, yeah, well, for me, I got the games. And for sure, you did, but other people are getting fucked. Because it's not regulated. And I just can't. I'm not down with it. I'm just not.
No. And testimonial means nothing. I mean, in anything, whether it's science or what. I mean, testimonial means nothing. Oh, it worked for me. Yeah. But at any point in time, that's called building trust. You run three game wheels that are legit, and then you scam on the fourth one and run off with the cash. So, I don't know. To me, you have to play. It sucks, but you're really playing this at your own risk.
If you want to say, well, I'm doing what people I know, you want to, then you're risking a lot less. You're only risking your friend fucking you over versus a perfect stranger in cases like this.
Correct.
You want to do that, it's fine. It's like holding your own poker game at your house. If you know everyone's coming over, you know everyone's not going to fuck over the person next to you.
Yeah.
Of course, there's always that one shady person that gets invited by someone else, you know, that maybe you're like, okay, this is kind of shady, this person is. But overall, then you're safer. But, you know, again, it's just another warning that be very, very careful when you're doing this stuff. And not because of the legality. Obviously, you're not going to get, you know, if the FBI or anyone else ever came after you, they're not going to come after the people that place the bets for me. They're going to come after the people that are running them and getting tens of thousands of dollars. Those are the people that are going to come back right after. First, for back taxes, but then second, they'll come after them for you know, either wire fraud of some sort or interstate gambling or something like that. So, just a word of warning. You want to do it, that's fine, but don't be surprised if you get fucked. This portion of the CU podcast is sponsored by the Launchbox Games Database, an online database for managing your retro games collection. It's free and community moderated, so check it out at gamesdb.launchbox-app.com.
This is very interesting. So we're finally at a point where we might get some pretty cool Virtual Boy emulation, and it's going to be done rather cheaply. So using Google Cardboard, there is now a way to emulate the Virtual Boy. Now, if you don't know what Google Cardboard is, it is what it sounds like. It is a set of goggles that you make. You can buy them, and you fold them up, and you make yourself a little set of goggles out of cardboard. And they have two eye lenses in them. And there is a spot to fit a smartphone. Most smartphones will work for this. I think, like, you know, the big Apple ones or whatever, you know, you can't use it or whatever.
Oh, you can't use, like, the giant S6s that are, like,
no, it's got to be something. It's got to be, like, a 6. It's got to be something that fits. Okay. But what it does is it creates a very low budget but pretty neat, I've used it before, you know, quote-unquote VR experience.
Why don't I have one of these?
I don't know. Just buy one. I mean, it's fun.
It's on eBay?
Yeah. I mean, just go to you can go to Amazon and get one for like $1.50.
Really?
Yes. And they have like different ones that are more comfortable, ones that are better for people with glasses, etc. So it's very neat. You know, it's convincing.
$20 It's convincing for a plastic one.
Yeah. So it's very convincing for Pat's just learning and having a blast. Yes. Yeah. So it's very fun, and it would be perfect for something like this. So now, using RetroArch or Arch emulation software, they have discovered a way with minor adjustments to you throw the ROMs on an Android phone, you use this emulation software, you put it in your Google Cardboard and grab yourself a Bluetooth controller, and boom, you're playing Virtual Boy games, and it's going to look like it does on the Virtual Boy. And the cool thing about this is, it displays the games in grayscale instead of red.
Oh my god.
which
that's fantastic.
It's fantastic.
We'll kill your eyes.
I mean, especially for someone like if you're colorblind, you know, where the red is causing even more eye strain than the system already did. This is a much cooler color to look at. It's not going to hurt your your eyes. They even stated that after playing for about half an hour, the person in this article they had no eye strain or anything like that.
Which is insane because I cannot play more than 15 minutes of Virtual Boy.
No,
ever. I got to put it down. It's really awful.
And I'm not going to. I mean, I've always said this about the Virtual Boy. It has some really neat and fun games on it. It's just that it's a pain in the fucking ass to use.
So the RetroArch emulator, I guess set, you can say, that's what the Retron 5 has used some of, I think. Excuse me, borrowed. I think that's what they borrowed a few of them.
Well, I know for Super Nintendo it was like SNES 9X, but anyways.
There's been Virtual Boy emulators for a year, but yes. What's the point of playing a Virtual Boy game without the 3D? Sort of like, now you're just playing a crappy, you know, LCD game or whatever. Basically, almost. You know what I mean? It's like, you want to try to do the 3D. So like I said, I'd heard of Google Cardboard. I had no idea what it actually was. It just sounds like the poor man's 3D that still gets the job done.
Yeah, it's fun.
That sounds fantastic.
It's very neat.
So you know what? I'm going to go out and buy this $16.30 VR box, which is plastic with a head strap. And I'll try this at some point. I think it'd be cool.
Yeah, absolutely. The only thing is, if you're using an iPhone, you're not going to be able to do it.
Then you know what? I'm not going to buy the $16.30 VR box.
Porn.
It says iPhone in the description, though.
No, I'm talking about you're not going to be able to do the Virtual Boy stuff.
Oh, that's not for iPhone?
No, because it's emulation.
Oh, you're sure you can't get the emulator?
Yeah, Androids you can just hack and dump ROMs onto. The iPhone's too
locked
out.
Well, I want to get an Android tablet. Can I just paste the tablet in my face?
No, I just told you can't use iPhone.
can I get a TV and strap it? No.
That sounds dirty. Can I get a TV and strap it?
Strap it on?
So
are you going to try this?
If I had an Android phone, I totally would. I might borrow my friend's Android phone and do it, because I actually have a Google Cardboard set at home.
What do you use it for right now?
Nothing. It was given to me for free. The only thing I've ever done on it was a little roller coaster simulation app, and it was a lot of fun.
Crazy coaster. Do you know I just got a 3D imager? Did I tell you that?
No.
In the box?
Like crazy.
Not the coaster.
Yeah, but that's nuts.
That's 3D Monster it comes with. Oh, you know that. I did a trade.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not trying to brag. I'm just saying. I'm trying to work it into the topic. Let us know in the comments if you think Pat's bragging. But also let us know if you had Google Glass. Google Glass? No.
Cardboard.
Cardboard. Does it stop becoming cardboard if it's not actually cardboard anymore? That's what I know. If it's a plastic version of cardboard, is it cardboard?
Can we just move on, please?
Is it like the generic, like Vaseline and petroleum jelly? Does it matter?
It's a generic trademark.
Ian's starting this topic where he says, I don't care either way.
are we going to get a segment out of this?
Let's see.
So Nintendo is releasing a pack of skins for the Wii U edition of Minecraft that give you some Mario skins, some Mario music, and a Mario world. I don't have a whole lot to say about that other than that. So it'll give you some items like POW blocks that will allow you to blow up things. What's more interesting to me is that they're throwing this skin pack at you, yet Minecraft Wii U completely missed all the opportunities to make itself interesting. So all crafting is still done on the TV screen like it would be on the... Yeah, it does not use the fucking tablet for anything.
Well, that's up to the developers, though. That's not up to Nintendo.
Well, no, I know, but I'm just saying, like, it's just... Well, I'm not sure who did the skin pack. Probably the developers, too. I just don't understand why the Wii U Minecraft isn't making use of the tablet, because that would be perfect. I might actually give a shit if I didn't need to learn all the fucking commands. Like, if I could just drag and drop and craft, that would be fun.
If you're not familiar with Minecraft, it's like Legoland, but virtual.
This is so sad.
And you chop up wood, and you get rocks and stuff, and you build houses, and you... You make your own weapons, and you use animals you can take care of or slay.
The world is randomized, and it's basically endless.
And you can do whatever you want. And I tried playing it with Ian one time, and I had to put the control down after 2 minutes. It's just not for me. It just isn't for me. And it's probably not for Ian, too.
It's not for me.
I'm not saying it should. If it was for us, we could have started a huge YouTube channel with 20 million subscribers just watching us play Minecraft. But that's not us.
Maybe the skin pack that's coming out. That was the topic of the segment.
Well, let's talk about the skin pack and not me failing to describe Minecraft to people. And by the way, the guy who sold it is now a gabillion-jillionaire who sold it to Microsoft. After he said he wasn't going to sell it ever. But I'd sell it too for like $25 billion, whatever he got. Anyway, so the Nintendo said the material is inspired by Super Mario World, Super Mario 64, and Super Mario Sunshine. And you can dress up as Mario, Luigi, and Princess Peach. Or mischievous foes like Bowser and Wario, or Toad in his delightful treasure tracker gear. I'm just advertising the game now for everyone. So the Wii U edition launches on June 17th, which will cost $30 and come with a Super Mario pack on the disc. I guess if you've never experienced Minecraft, now's your chance if you love Mario.
Buy it on a dying system.
But this isn't
instead of like the PS4, that's a thriving community where you can play with other people.
Well, what's interesting though is that...
No, it's not interesting.
No. You're griefing on this segment. What's interesting though is that don't they have like a Minecraft? Not Minecraft. Don't they have like a Halo pack or other games have their some similar sort of packs that are...
There's tons of skin packs. I don't know what ones exist,
so,
but yes.
So it's interesting that Minecraft has bridged all these different consoles and developers to say, oh, we're going to work with everyone, and Nintendo doesn't give a shit because they figure, oh, we're just going to sell it, you know, whatever. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. Can you think of any other game where that happens, where it bridges the gap between different developers and consoles?
But because it's specific to the Wii U and they're not universal servers, it's not really bridging any gaps.
You're not going to see the Halo skins on the Wii U version. Okay, yes. I try to bring up an interesting point, but it actually wasn't at all.
No, but that was my whole point. Like that to further the fact that it doesn't make use of any of the Wii U's features, this is a game that's about community and playing with each other. Why would... I mean, is this supposed to entice people to play it on a system that's not going to have a user base for it?
So we got 4 minutes out of this segment.
All right,
but what's interesting? I'll just end with this, and I'll help shout out to my pal Brennel Floss, who one of his last short videos he did was about Minecraft, and it was clever. Spoilers, it's like Minecraft's a wondrous world where you can create anything, and then all of it is just shots of dick monuments that are built one after the other, and that's what people do in Minecraft. Because at the end of the day, we're very phallic, mm-hmm. our society.
Yeah.
So I went to the movies, part of my birthday weekend. Today's my birthday. Wish me happy birthday in the comments, and then, you know, talk about my hair. I don't know. But Captain America: Civil War came out over the weekend, and I saw it with Frank. Frank had not been to the movie theater in 4 years. Since Avengers.
Oh.
And this is a guy that loves the Nolan Batman trilogy. He thinks Dark Knight Rises is one of the best movies he's ever seen. And he's serious. I think it's an okay movie. I think Dark Knight's a lot better. Anyway, I couldn't get him in the theaters to see that. When that came out, a few years ago? Three years ago, whatever it was.
Or more.
Couldn't get him to see that. So it's interesting that I got Frank to see this. He came over literally 2 days before when I had it on DVR. Age of Ultron, since he didn't see that. And you really need to see Age of Ultron before Civil War. Yes, absolutely, you do. People in the comments agree, but you do have to see Age of Ultron. And Avengers, you should. Other than that, maybe Winter Soldier to a smaller degree. Anyway, so he saw the backstory.
Oh, no, okay. I'm sorry. Yes, absolutely, you're right.
You have to see that. So he went to the movies with me. We checked out our new movie theater nearby, which me and Ian were gushing about before. And I saw Captain America: Civil War, and it lived up to the hype. It was a very good movie. Was it my favorite MCU movie? I might have to stick with Winter Soldier for that.
I stick with Winter Soldier, actually.
Because this is what I'm going to say, and people say you're crazy. Winter Soldier was a better movie, but I enjoyed Civil War more. I can objectively say that. Winter Soldier had a tighter narrative, because obviously there's only a couple of characters you have to worry about. It was a better sort of through line of what's going on, even though it weaved in and out. It was like, okay, there's a somewhat of a linear plot we're following here with twists and turns. Civil War had to juggle about three or four subplots, characters coming in and out, and maybe, you know, subplots not being as maybe as gifted with a bow as much as you'd like, you know. For example, like Vision and Scarlet Witch is one prime example with that. And then plus you had to deal with bringing in and introducing Black Panther and trying to have him weave through the story, which they mostly were successful with. I'll get into that. But and of course, introducing Spider-Man. But otherwise, to me, it's unbelievable that the Russo brothers managed to do what they did with this movie.
Sure.
And have it stand.
It's
not have it crumble under its own weight.
It's a feat. It's definitely a feat for sure. I would have to say that, yes, Winter Soldier is the easy pick for me still as my number one. I greatly enjoyed Civil War. The action was tight and fantastic.
Oh, my God.
It also had far more action than I expected. If you've ever read the Civil War comic, there's and this is something that I did miss. I wish there was a little bit more pondering, I guess, on the morality of these Sokovia Accords, as they called them in the movie. But the action was fantastic. Every single action scene was mm-hmm. amazing. And what was amazing to me was how they balanced the tone and the mood of the movie. It starts pretty serious, and then it gets pretty lighthearted, I mean, to a degree, in the center of the movie. I mean, I'm not saying it turns into a fucking slapstick comedy, but there's levity. Something that,
there's levity. There's moments of levity, yes.
Something that they always, that critics, you know, smashed Batman vs. Superman for. There was levity in this movie in spots where it was needed. There were still laughs. I mean, there are going to be minor spoilers here as we talk, obviously.
No, there's
going to
be spoilers.
Know that. Put it in the fucking headline so people don't cry about it in the link. But the middle fight scene, where the airport fight scene.
End of the second act, basically.
Yeah. Fantastic action. Had impact and weight in terms of the story, but also had some of the funniest one-liners during the film.
Yes, it's been hyperbole, but that is the finest superhero fight ever put on screen.
Yeah, it's incredible.
There's not even a close second.
No.
Because you had to balance 12 characters, have them all get their shots, and so to speak, and use their powers, but then use it in conjunction with other heroes, and have it all make sense, and have the fight geographically make sense at the same time, and have clear objectives between what one character is doing to help another one, to avoid another character, and to pull that all off, the choreography of doing that, while, like I said, still having the characters show their personality while they fight, and why they are fighting. For example, Spider-Man saying, you're doing something bad according to Mr. Stark,
yes.
I want to stop you.
Right.
Well, Captain America trying to explain why are you fighting here, you know. That is, on paper, that could seem easy, but in actuality, that to me was incredible, that fight scene.
When we talked about Winter Soldier two years ago, we commended them for their directing and how at any given time during an action scene, you knew who was where and what was going on. And
the street fight, which was based off of Heat. Yes.
Yes. When I went into this movie, I went in saying in my head, I'm going to pay attention. I'm going to see if they can pull it off. And they did. You basically knew what was going on at all times, which is incredible for an ensemble. This is also where the movie does falter a little bit for me. And don't get me wrong, the movie was great. Winter Soldier had a much clearer idea, I think, of what was going on. Because you could focus on the story of just a few characters, like you had mentioned earlier. And this is a sticking point for me. This was like Avengers 2.5.
Sure.
This was a Captain America movie, yes, but it was still heavily focused on ensemble. And when you have an ensemble, at least for me, I always find myself wishing I could know a little bit more about what's going on with the other characters. And that, even at 2.5 hours... the Vision Scarlet Witch one is a big one. I just wish there had been a little bit more. I wish there had been a little bit more Clint Barton. I wish there had been more Hawkeye. Because Hawkeye, in my opinion, has gotten better and yes. better with each movie. And he's becoming more and more, even though his life is in his background is different in the Marvel movie universe. He's becoming more and more the character that I love in the comics. And I really enjoy Hawkeye for that reason. And I wish they had done more with Hawkeye. Spider-Man, of course, he was only going to, I mean, Spider-Man was integral to the airport fight, but I understand why. You got to introduce him little by little. And by the way, pitch fucking perfect. I mean, my wife, who does not particularly like Spider-Man, as we're leaving the theater, goes, I've never been so excited for a Spider-Man movie in my life. I mean, she's all on board with this guy. But let me just, before we jump back to you, my other problem with the movie is the ending. And it's the actual, I mean, the, well, let me commend it for something first. I really love how this movie, kind of subverted you. There really was no big villain other than the internal fighting. They lead you on that they're going to be fighting these five other Winter Soldiers at the end. And they leave it to the last minute when they finally get to where they're being held, and they all have bullets in their head. Because the main bad guy is a wimpy little shrimp of an ex-commander who, you know, his family was killed in Sokovia during Avengers 2. And, you know, there was no climatic battle with a major super villain. It was Iron Man and Captain America fighting each other. So I found that to be, I can't quite put in words, but I just think that's fantastic that up until the last moment, you think they're going to find a way out a big supervillain piece, and they don't.
They say, mm-hmm.
So that's great. My problem is, afterwards, I started to wonder, where are you going with this and how are you going to end it? And I don't think they knew how to either.
Oh, okay. This is where I think you're not seeing. They set up the entire future.
I'm just talking about the immediate ending. I know they're setting things up, but the whole cell phone and the letter thing, it was just like, well, we got to put a fucking bow on this somewhere.
This is why I love this movie. And I will see it again. Maybe when I see it again, I might like it as much as Winter Soldier. It'll inch closer to it. Because of exactly that. There is no... This isn't like, oh, the world's going to end. This isn't like, we have to stop this. They thought it was, but it wasn't.
Right.
The villain was beautiful.
Yeah, I agree.
After almost every fucking major Marvel villain in these movies being a giant fucking robot, or another robot they gotta beat, or Ultron, or aliens, it's just a guy who wants revenge, and he does it in an intelligent way.
Yep.
And it's brilliantly... throughout the film, a mystery of what the hell this guy is doing, because you don't know what he's doing.
Right.
It's scene after scene with him getting the code book for Winter Soldier. He actually fucking kills a member of Hydra to get it.
Yep.
So he's going after a bad guy and getting it, and then the whole plan with the bomb at the UN, and then that, and then killing the guy to pretend he's the psychologist, talking to Winter Soldier. He's very intelligent, but he says at the end of the movie, I know I can't beat these guys. They'll kill me. Ultron couldn't beat him. I can't beat him.
Right.
They're going to beat themselves. Brilliant.
Yeah. No, I thought that it was fantastic.
That was a red herring that I don't think anyone saw coming.
Nope.
That you said, oh, they're going to get Iron Man, Winter Soldier, and Captain America. They're going to fight these Winter Soldiers, and then something's going to happen where they have to beat each other up. Oh, no.
See, I was hoping and I thought that the movie would be smarter than to do this, but especially after the whole Batman versus Superman, we're going to fight each other, and then,
we're going to fight Doomsday.
Now we're going to fight Doomsday they didn't. There never was that reconciliation point where all of a sudden you had to fight it, and they teased it the whole goddamn time, and that's what made the movie brilliant. Like I said, don't take it the wrong way. I don't think the movie wasn't, and yes, I know they set it up. I guess I don't know how you could have ended it better, but it just seemed to wrap up so quick in those last 5 minutes.
Well, here's the thing. The runtime, they probably cut 15 minutes out of this.
Yes.
This is where, but this movie flew by.
Oh, yeah. It does seem like a 2.5-hour movie.
There was really only 4 action scenes in the movie.
Yeah, it felt like it was packed.
The great intro where you saw the Avenger team, the new Avenger team, going down to Lagos. You had the Black Panther chasing after
Winter Soldier. I love Black Panther.
And that was, can I just say how awesome it was that you actually bought the fact that they were running like 25, 30 miles an hour in between cars, and it actually looked like they were doing that.
Yep.
Like, so that was the second fight scene. Obviously, you have the huge airport fight,
mm-hmm.
which was like 20 minutes long, and it flew by. And then you have the last intimate fight.
Oh, don't forget the stairwell fight.
Was that leading up to the chasing Winter Soldier? That was all one big
sequence?
Yeah,
it was, but I look at it separately because the choreography in that stairwell fight was fucking fantastic.
Was that also... So that was all one big sequence then.
I think it was. That's the thing. The fight sequences in this and the non-fight sequences just flowed so easily into each other that it's actually, unlike most movies, it's really hard to chop it up into fight, dialogue, fight, dialogue, fight, dialogue.
But this is why I love this movie. Because they didn't go for the, okay, we blew our wad in Act 2 with this awesome superhero fight, which we haven't even really talked about, that fight, what happens in it. So then the last final fight will be a letdown. No, the final fight was even more devastating to watch.
Yeah, that was...
It was nuts.
Did you think they were going to kill someone off? I kind of thought they might go crazy and kill off Bucky.
I thought that they might, but the emotional... This is why I love the Russo brothers, because... I always maintain killing off a character while it takes a team of balls is the cheapest way to get heat.
Sure. Sure.
They got heat without killing off a major character.
No.
They got just as much heat, if not more. I knew they weren't killing off War Machine if they showed it in the trailer.
Yeah.
So that to me was just as devastating because he's fucking paralyzed.
Yeah.
That's really bad.
Right. And
even if Stark and Hulk helped him out with his technology, which he shows at the end, he's paralyzed. But I loved even War Machine said, yeah, well, I signed up for this. I believed in it. I love the fact that they made it clear with every single one of those characters why they were motivated to pick the side they were doing.
Yep.
That was extremely important. Maybe to a lesser extent, if you want to say to a lesser extent, Ant-Man, he hates authority and he loves Captain America, if you want to say that. But everyone else had a clear reason.
And to keep it realistic, I mean, that they've built her character to be this way, but I think it was telegraphed from a mile away, but it was also good that they had the conflicted
Black Widow. Yeah, that worked well.
Yes.
And it made sense, and it was great because she sided with Tony for once. And that's what I liked, again, is that the movie didn't force you to take one side or the other. It just said, here's the motivations of both, we've laid them all out, and you choose. And maybe you don't make a choice. Maybe you think there's good points. I think there's good points to both. I think this is great. This isn't a black or white thing to me. Then that's what's so heartbreaking in that final battle is that you're watching two people fight where I can see both their points. Well, you know, it was nuts. And especially with that reveal at the end, which I'm not going to say I'm smarter than other people, but I've seen people say they didn't see that coming. I saw it coming. I think it was telegraphed for me personally. The twist at the end, which was that Winter Soldier kills, was the one that killed the Stark parents back in 91.
It didn't blow my mind, but it wasn't really at the forefront. I don't think I necessarily saw it coming.
I put it together after... First of all, the beginning of the movie where they showed the de-aged Robert Downey Jr. when he was like 18, which was amazing effects.
Right.
That was incredible.
I scrutinized that as soon as I literally just looked at his face. I'm like, this is amazing.
What are we watching? Weird Science again?
Yeah.
Like 85, 86? I mean, they did it in Ant-Man with Michael Douglas, and it was convincing there too,
mm-hmm.
to de-age him to about, I don't know, 40-ish, 45-ish.
Right.
But here, you're taking 30 years off the guy's life. Robert Downey Jr. is like 50 years old. He's like a teenager there. So when he mentioned that was the last time I saw him on the way to the airport, and then they cut to, you know, the car, and then Buck, I'm like, okay, that I put it together then. But it still didn't lessen the impact of seeing it. I won't ask plot hole why there was a closed circuit television on the road there, that happened to you know, tape the accident.
I thought they mentioned it. I could have sworn there was a mention that there was, because I think it was a road near their house. I think there were security cameras on the road.
I must have missed that. But
I could be wrong, but I seem to recall
that scene, even the reveal was beautifully done and fucking brutal.
Yeah.
The fact that like Bucky knows he did it and knows he can't say anything, and you find out that Steve knows it, and Steve didn't want to say anything. It was so tragic because all the reasons for keeping it secret were valid.
Yes.
Because the result was Tony goes nuts, and rightfully so.
Right.
And he says, I don't give a shit if he didn't know it. He killed my mom.
Right.
And you understand that. Like, if you were in this situation, you'd probably say, yeah, fuck you. I'm going to kill you too. I don't care if you were brainwashed. You deserve to die. And Bucky was responsible for other deaths that had happened, you know, and people that gotten hurt when they were escaping and things like that nature. So yeah, maybe Bucky should have been killed. It would have prevented other people from. These are the questions that the movie brings up. I will say though that the fact that it did turn it from a morality at the end to, well, he killed my parents.
See, that did bother me.
Yes, a little bit,
because all of a sudden that whole Sokovia stuff, it shifts from being moralistic to personal.
Yes, I understand that, but it seemed like they did sort of patch up to that point, though. So you need something, I think, extreme to have them come to blows, and there's nothing more extreme than you killed my parents.
Sure.
And seeing it on screen was, holy shit, they actually showed Bucky. They didn't shy away from saying doing it off screen. They showed, no, here's Bucky. You like Bucky? You're about to see him kill two people in cold blood, and they showed it.
Yep.
Just smashing the father's head in, and then the mom screaming, and then he just chokes her. I mean, it was fucking one of the most brutal things I've seen in a Marvel movie.
Yeah,
just by how visceral it was. And Tony is just looking at it, there was like a slight violin swell. Only it was mostly silent when that happened. You're like, oh fuck,
yeah,
this is gonna go down. Like, and this is not gonna be fun and pretty. And it wasn't pretty. And even then, the movie didn't ask you to pick a side.
Right.
It even went into like Tony's helmet when his AI is telling him you can't beat him 1-on-1. So it's actually like, wow, it's like Tony's now the protagonist fighting these villains and trying to get Bucky, but then Captain America's trying to save Buck. The balancing act they did for you to not to take a side, at least the writers and directors not taking a side, to me was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Like right down the middle.
Sure.
Like half the movie is Stark trying to play politics, trying to hold the team together and not throw Cap in jail. Like, he's on the phone, like, holy, like, fuck, like, I'm trying to keep us together, and you're out up in Germany, you know, beating up the German SWAT team with Bucky. Like, what the fuck are you thinking? Like, what do you think? Like, it's just a tragedy that you see just unwind slowly throughout. You know, so to me, that's even better structure than at the start, well, we just don't like each other because we both disagree and go at it over the whole movie. It's just, it winds its way through. And all the whole time, they're both trying to make it up, or even at the airport, it's like, come on, just come on, let's, come on.
Right.
And it's like, no, absolutely not. Cap's like, absolutely not. So real quick, you touched on Spider-Man and how much Vine was pleased. Imagine how pleased I was.
Sure.
Spider-Man's my favorite one. And they had to do it quick. The introduction, I love the introduction.
The introduction was good.
I love the fact that they just assume, you know how fucking Spider-Man got his powers. You've seen it twice in the past 15 years. But they still alluded to it, though. So, Tony's like, how'd you get this power? It's like, this thing happened.
Yeah, but he keeps interrupting him, which I thought was funny. Like, I mean, that was a very big meta joke, was we don't need to go over your fucking origin again.
Yeah, this thing happened, and I get all the sensory overload, and then they bring up the webs real quick, and he said, yeah, I made them. I make that.
Yep, thank fucking
heavens. You must have loved the little, was it an Apple II or Macintosh in the corner?
It was a little Macintosh.
It was a Macintosh?
Yeah.
So, here's the thing that I realized he had an accent, a New York accent, which it clicked with me, but I watched Kevin Smith talk about it. It's actually a Queens accent.
Really?
A specific Queens accent, which I'm not too familiar with. That's brilliant, because Tobey Maguire never had a New York accent.
No.
And neither did Andrew Garfield.
Mm-mm.
And he's a kid growing up in Queens. Of course he'd have a New York accent. It's something so simple that you take for granted. And it adds so much more to the character that now I can't imagine him with not having it. Whenever I read Spider-Man before, I never read it with that accent, but I should have.
Yes. It makes perfect sense.
It makes perfect sense. But that's only something Marvel has thought of once they got the character. That's why it's so important that Marvel has the character. Because they really fucking care about Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it is the best Spider-Man on film ever.
Oh, yeah.
I know it's only been, well, if you count the TV show one. Perfect as Peter.
Perfect as Spider-Man.
I always said that Andrew Garfield was pretty good or good as Spider-Man. Perfect as Spider-Man. Perfect because, again, he's a kid, but he's carefree. The quips, stopping Bucky's bionic arm and saying, oh, you got a metal arm. What? That's so cool. That's something Spider-Man would do. Because he can get away with it because he's so powerful. All the other heroes, Captain America can't really stop that arm.
But he's also a kid. I mean, he legit.
But he's also a kid. So he loves. So you see the wonder of Spider-Man while he's getting into it for the first time with his characters around him. But he's more powerful than them. Maybe he doesn't even realize it.
Mm-hmm.
But he just beautiful. Like, the fact that Spider-Man took out Winter Soldier and Falcon. And while bothering the shit out of them, that was never done. That was never shown in the Raimi movies at all. That taunting to that extent, and really not even with Andrew Garfield. Again, against the Falcon. By the way, Falcon was badass in this.
Oh yeah, he was
all the fact that they're making Falcon's wings as a shield, and they're moving, and of course the drone is fantastic. Red Wing. Love what they've done with Falcon. Love what they've done with him. But Spider-Man was absolute perfection. I don't care that they put him in just to set up the movie next year, because it was fantastic. And of course the great Captain America little Spider-Man fight was insane. And of course, I can't imagine if I was living in Brooklyn or Queens, but their exchange, "Hey kid, where are you from?" Queens, Brooklyn. Yeah, just a little heartwarming little moment to humanize both characters and let you know these are people. These aren't just like, you know, action figures in the scene. There's humanity to these characters.
Yeah.
And real quick, though, the one part I do not think they did a great job with, again, Vision and Scarlet Witch, especially in that battle, they're so powerful, you almost forgot that they were there, because how can you keep those two characters busy while everything else is going on?
Well, I love Scarlet Witch, but yeah, I mean, what they did for her was they basically kept her busy by making sure not everything was falling on people.
But Vision could take care of most of those guys by himself if you really wanted.
I feel like Vision was probably the weakest portrayed in that movie.
I liked how he was portrayed. I think Paul Bettany's doing a great job with it.
No, he is. The weakest represented is maybe a better way to put it.
He doesn't have a lot to do, and he was sort of dropped into Age of Ultron out of nowhere. So here you go, take Vision. Like, we have to introduce him. So they had to do something with him, but the story arc with him and Scarlet Witch to me is sort of like, why does he like her again? Like, because they made food together? They try to drop that, well, she has a humanity that he's interested in because other people are scared of her because she's powerful. I understand that, but it wasn't fleshed out enough for me to get behind it.
Right.
But otherwise, I love the Vision character in the movies. I still do.
No, I think he's great. And I love the Scarlet Witch character. And this is what I touched upon with ensemble movies. I wish we could have delved a little bit deeper, but at 2.5 hours, you can't be making Return of the King here.
Yes, and I'm hoping there's going to be a director's cut. Let's talk about Black Panther real quick. We only talked about it. Great character, great introduction. Again, I love the fact that we need a fucking origin dropped in the middle of the movie. It's, you know,
it's introduced as the action's going. Black Panther is not just me. It's been a protector for Wakanda for generations.
It's like the Phantom, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
From the old pulps where it gets passed down.
I can't remember the actor's name. I can't remember anyone.
Chad Boseman.
Right, okay. And I couldn't remember.
Who's already done James Brown and Jackie Robinson. Now he's Black Panther. Like, he's blowing up, this kid.
He was awesome. Yeah. I thought he was fantastic. I wish
he had more to do in the third act.
Yes, exactly.
I almost felt like they should have just not had him at all in the third act, because it was sort of like his only character arc went from I want revenge, well, I see what you've done to these other people, so I now feel I don't need revenge anymore.
I thought it was good. It was just because he had so little to do in the beginning of the third act, it was just kind of dropped in.
Yes. I understand, though.
They needed a hero to be there to do the functions that he did.
So to not give Zemo the easy way out of committing suicide.
Right.
Which is heroic in of itself. He could have killed the guy easily. You expect him to just kill the guy. He's like, no. Well,
he was going to, and then he retracts his claws.
Yeah, because you heard the reason for him doing it, and you're like, well, this is actually a sympathetic villain, which are always the best villains. It's like, he lost his family to these superheroes. I remember at the beginning of the movie, Tony Stark, her, losing the son. So it's like, you know, the motivations for all the characters were there. The action was great. Paul Rudd is fantastic as Ant-Man.
Yes.
If you've not seen Ant-Man, you've seen
it. I haven't, but I mean, he was great in that.
Holy fuck.
In this movie.
It's funny, because when Frank saw that, he asked who it was. He thought it was Deadpool. I'm like, Frank, that's a different movie. It's not Deadpool. I told you that. You got to see Ant-Man. Paul Rudd is just magical.
I mean, I plan on it.
Shaking your hand too long.
Yeah.
And the giant man. I am
your conscience. But he's running through Iron Man's suit.
And I marked out when he was giant man and went, whoa! When he held it, who was he holding in his hand? Was it War Machine?
Yes. Yeah, he flings War Machine.
Him and Spider-Man brought the levity to it on opposite sides that you needed for that battle.
Yep.
So it wasn't just. And again, you know what I like about this movie? It was all shot in daylight, there was no scenes at night, and the effects were fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see everything clearly.
Yep.
And Spider-Man was great. Can I just say Spider-Man was great? Because Spider-Man was great. And I'm a big Spider-Man fan. Like Ian touched upon that, Vonnie said that I didn't give a shit. I was not really looking forward to this amazing Spider-Man movie. So I was like, I got to see him. I really want to see Homecoming, like now.
Yeah.
I want to see him now.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Holland did a fantastic job. And
that's his name.
Yeah, Tom Holland.
I'm forgetting all the actor names.
Great chemistry with Robert Downey Jr., which is why you're going to have Iron Man in Homecoming. At least some other villains might show up. Great job. We're going on forever for this. Like, so again, I enjoyed it a lot. I might have enjoyed it more than Winter Soldier, but I think Winter Soldier was a better crafted film. But I'm not faulting the Russo brothers for that at all, because there was so much more they had a balance, like juggling act with this movie.
I mean, that's where I stand too. Winter Soldier was an extremely tight packed narrative, just perfectly done. This its flaw was in the very nature of the story, I think, in that it had to have been an ensemble movie, and for me, ensemble movies are never going to be as good as more tightly focused on one or two or three character movies.
And that last fight scene was brutal, but I loved it. Like, mm-hmm. It had to be that brutal.
Yeah.
Just bloody, and they even had that one shot from Civil War where the shield against
the
beam's coming out. So, anyway, you know what was not a great movie?
So,
we're going to go from joy to 180 time, 360!
No, I'm sorry, this is joyous. It's joyous because I want someone to please try to continue to defend Zack Snyder to me. Because, in a two... So, you want to know where, like, this is coming from? Zack Snyder, like, his current universe, in a 2008 interview, Zack Snyder was talking about when he got into comics and how he couldn't get into normal comics because there wasn't any killing or sex, and how that's why Watchmen appealed to him. It wasn't the fucking intellect. He said it wasn't the highbrowness of the comic. It wasn't the intellect in the comic. It was because it offered killing and sex, whereas normal comics didn't do that.
Which is, again, why I think Zack Snyder directed a great story into an average or slightly above average film. Because of that.
So, he also stated, they asked him about what they thought about the beginning of Nolan's Batman trilogy. At this point in time, it would have been...
This was an interview with Entertainment Weekly, by the way.
This was, I believe, before Dark Knight, but definitely after Batman Begins. Yes. Which I really enjoyed. I still enjoy Batman Begins a lot. It's just a pure superhero movie before it got, even more intelligent and better. They asked him about it, and he was like, oh, so...
Can I read this quote?
I want to... No, no,
Let me read it.
Okay.
You could call it highbrow comics, but to me, that comic book was just pretty sexy, talking about Watchmen. I had a buddy who tried getting me into normal comics, but I was all like, no one is having sex or killing each other. This isn't really doing it for me. I was a little broken that way. So when Watchmen came along, I was, this is more my scene.
And you are just fuck. You're.
That's not why Watchmen is cool. No, yeah. It's not the sex and the violence.
It's not at all. So let's continue on. Mm. So when asked about Batman Begins, and here we go. This is why. Oh, and this explains Sucker Punch, which is just nothing but a fucking rape fantasy. Everyone says that about Christopher Nolan's Batman Begins. Hey, Batman's dark. I'm like, no. Batman's cool. He gets to go to a Tibetan monastery and be trained by ninjas. Okay? I want to do that. But he doesn't, like, get raped in prison. That could happen in my movie. If you want to talk about dark, that's how it would go. The man is obsessed with rape.
Holy fuck. Did Warner Brothers see this interview before entrusting him with their fucking whole entire multi-billion-dollar movie universe?
I don't know, but did you see that? Did you see that the director of The Flash walked?
Did he walk? Oh, is he gone for good?
Director of The Flash walked.
Recently?
Last week.
Are you serious?
Yes. It's actually at the beginning of the article.
Seth Graham Smith?
Yeah. Left the project? Yep.
Citing creative... Differences.
And there was rumor that James Wan, the director of the Aquaman movie, was getting cold feet, although he denied that. But still, it sounds like there's a lot of turmoil in there.
Wonder fucking why!
Yeah, and this also explains the quick assignment of Ben Affleck to,
Executive
producer of the Justice League movies. because you need to get this crazy, loony, fucking rape-obsessed fucking asshole off of your goddamn movies before no one wants to touch a DC property ever again.
You know what, people out there? When we rail on this stuff, we are not DC haters. We are not Marvel fanboys. Again, I'll say it every time. We want to see good movies.
And I'll say it again.
I love the Batman trilogy, even though I think Dark Knight Rises is a little shaky. I love those movies.
My current comic book pull is more DC than Marvel.
I have the original Superman DVD out there, which is, I still maintain, one of the best superhero movies of all time, the original Superman by Richard Donner, who's a great director. It's out there on my shelf. You can see it. I do not want to say we told you so when this shit happens, but we saw this coming fucking
day one.
Galaxies, not miles, galaxies away we saw this coming.
Yes.
Galaxies. So, yes, this is what happened. And they made this public for a reason, because this could have been behind the scenes. They could have done this without letting anyone know.
Yeah.
They said, Ben Affleck, please fucking hold Zack Snyder's hand and keep his fucking ass in line, because we're about to put out these movies. And by the way, Batman and Superman underperformed. It's not even going to reach $900 million. They expected to at least reach at least $1 billion. It had to reach to be successful.
Not going to break even.
It's not going to break even, but it's disappointing.
Yeah,
that I think it only made $1 million the past weekend. Like, it's just done. It's absolutely done.
Right.
Like, it's absolutely. I know it's been out for 5 weeks already, but no one gives a shit about it. They need any sort of momentum. So yeah, Affleck's going to come on to executive produce, but they even said, they in their statement, Warner Brothers said, to help guide it with Zack Snyder, you know, to make sure the writing and directing is as good as it can be. Basically saying, we don't fucking trust you, Zack Snyder, because you fucked us on Batman v Superman.
Right.
That was it. There's no other. If there are two big shots in the DC universe, Batman v Superman, underperformed with them fighting each other, then Justice League may not do nearly as well, or might do worse. Especially since, critically, it got panned. And reportedly, you saw it on fucking, it's now a meme of Affleck's face.
Sad Affleck. I feel so bad for the guy.
Because he was the only thing when people liked was Affleck.
That's what I've heard. Even as a shitty branding people for Murder Batman, yes, he was supposedly the bright, shining fucking beacon of the film.
But supposedly Affleck was humiliated.
Yeah.
Reportedly humiliated that this movie got panned critically. Because he doesn't want to be. He's through that part of his career. He's through the Daredevils and Jersey Girl part of his career where he was laughed at. He's made a comeback with The Town.
The Town was so good.
And the one he just, Argo, that he won Best Director for. Nominated for Best Director.
I did not see Argo, but I did see The Town, and The Town was lovely.
So,
a great movie.
He's made a comeback both as an actor and as a director and as someone respected again. And now, all of a sudden, you're in a shitty fucking blockbuster movie. It's 2003 all over again with Daredevil. That's what he's thinking.
Yeah.
And Warner Brothers knows that they have to placate him or else he could walk. Oh, he was also supposedly upset that they revealed the fact that the solo Batman movie was going to be coming before it was official. So it sounds like he's not happy at all, Warner Brothers.
No. If you told me 10 years ago that I was going to find Ben Affleck a sympathetic character, I would have laughed. But I really do feel for the guy here.
Did you see him when Henry Cavill had an answer about the bad critique? He looks like he wants to jump out the window.
No, yeah.
And Cavill's like, well, you know, people are passionate and trying to give the answer. And Affleck's like, I can't believe I'm sitting here.
Yeah.
I can't believe this is 30% of Rotten Tomatoes.
I did this movie.
Argo won Best Picture. That's right. But didn't win Best Director, but got nominated. So, holy shit, Rape in a Batman Begins movie.
Just to do
it. I wonder what Nolan thought. Well, Nolan's like not really involved with these. He's sort of like producer on the outside, but he's not really involved directly.
Here's some money.
You think Nolan, like when he met Snyder, was like, oh yeah, nice to meet you. The side, like, you're just a fucking hack. I can't believe Warner Bros. Is hiring you.
Yeah.
Because I can't picture someone of Nolan's pedigree being okay with hiring Zack Snyder to shepherd the entire DC movie universe.
No.
I can't imagine it.
Neither can I.
So, that's all. I mean, anyone we can say about this? Rape in a Batman movie? And this is the guy doing Justice League.
We told you so.
He probably doesn't understand the reason for the rape scene that was in Watchmen.
Right.
You know, there's a reason for that scene. And it wasn't cool.
No.
And the violence wasn't there to be cool. Which is, again, why you went from a fucking graphic novel of Watchmen where the action was supposed to be just brutal for a point to, we'll do slow-mo fight scenes that didn't happen in the comics, like in the prison. This doesn't get it at all. So Affleck, yes, I want you to turn this around and basically, you know, it'd be great if they basically just keep his name attached, but then throw him off the set. They've done that in movies before. It's like, oh yeah, you know, with the Directors Guild, we have to say you're a part of this movie, but
right.
You're actually staying your fucking trailer. I'm mm-hmm. Affleck. I'm going to direct the movie.
Right.
That'd be the best thing for it.
Yes.
So, YouTube drama has been a topic we brought up past few weeks, and because of Markiplier and PewDiePie talking about it. And our pal, Grade A Under A, talked about it, about YouTube drama and why there's a difference between drama and actually spreading the word on something that's important that you should know about. And that's how I want to sort of couch this conversation we're about to have. So in his lively video, Grade A Under A, after really viciously attacking Markiplier, he probably went a little over the top, Gray. You went a little over the top, I'll say that. But I still love you. But your points were still valid. He viciously called out Matthew Santoro. I mean, viciously. Matthew Santoro is a guy that's grown in prominence the past couple years. I think he has 500,000 YouTube subscribers.
Jesus.
He does the edutainment sort of genre where it's like, hey guys, you're talking about the top 10, you know, scariest serial killers of the 20th century, or the top 10 weird science facts that you didn't know, you know, like stuff like that, where they're list based,
right?
For the most part, and these type of videos haven't been done before, maybe not list based, but my like Vsauce, for example, they do like these sciencey based intelligent videos that are also entertaining, and people love them. They like to learn. People like to learn and like to be entertained. And when you combine it and make it fun, people are all there for it.
Yeah.
So Matthew Santoro has built his YouTube empire upon doing this. The problem is, Grady points out, probably plagiarized a lot of those videos from other websites, including one called Listverse. So if you go to Listverse, Ian,
mm-hmm.
you can literally look up articles of lists. For example, the top 10 alleged battles between humans and aliens.
What the fuck? Okay.
I want to read that right now.
Sure.
The top 10 ordinary things people did that turned horribly disastrous. 10 controversial artifacts that could have changed history. 10 bizarre ways scientists believe aliens are contact. So this is a website where they hire writers to go and research this stuff. Probably from Google, Wikipedia. You know, you click on an article and it lays out these cool facts for you. And there's bizarre, entertainment, general knowledge, lifestyle, science, society. This is cool content. People have spent time, and people are hired to write these articles. So what Grade alleges in his video, he shows a list that Matthew did that were exactly the same, where Matthew Santoro, sounds like Listverse is his go-to place for his one-stop shop for his videos, where he'll just go to there, find the list, and make a video version of that list and run it down top to bottom.
That's not cool.
It's plagiarism.
Yeah, there's a word for that.
It's plagiarism. Grade called him out. Matthew Santoro then responded saying, I appreciate everyone's concern. I'll let you know that going forward, I'm going to be citing all my future videos and going back and citing all my past videos. That's great. It's still plagiarism.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you cite something. It's still plagiarism. There's a rule when you use sources of information, you only can use a certain amount.
Yeah, I was going to say, a citation, if you're writing a paper, a citation has a very specific sort of boundaries in terms of what you can use.
Yes.
You cannot cite an entire paper and just be like, cool, it's mine. That doesn't fucking work. Same thing for a video. You can't just say, I'm using this person's... It's still plagiarism.
So, to me, I sort of look at this as getting caught with PEDs in baseball. Because Matthew Santoro has built a YouTube empire now. Off of other people's work. And so what? He got caught. He already has all the subscribers. He already has millions of views. He's making a ton of money doing it. So what if he's humiliated a little bit by Grade and by others now? And plus, there's other people videos pointing out the other videos, more specifically, that he's also ripped off from Listverse. Listverse even came out and said, yeah, we've been concerned about this, of people doing this, because they pay people to write those articles. And now here's a guy making money off of Listverse and maybe other sites that he shouldn't be doing. So the problem is, he's still there. He's not going to stop doing it. That's how he built his empire. But how is it allowed to get to this point? That's the issue. Why are other YouTubers not... Other YouTubers might know about this stuff, but they're afraid to talk about it. That's where I'm going to get into. So, Boogie2988 is a big YouTuber. A million subscribers or more. He talks about stuff going on YouTube. He talks about game stuff. He does his Francis rants. He does unboxing videos. He did a video that he's pulled down. He did a couple videos. The first video, he basically wanted to look at Grade A versus Matthew Santoro and try to be objective. He pointed out at the beginning of the video that he's on friendly terms with Matthew Santoro. So right there, you know that, okay, it could be a bias coming in. But by the end of the video, whether he consciously realized it or not, and I wish the video was still there so I could other people can look at it, he basically defends Matthew Santoro in the video saying, I see it being cool because he's going to start citing sources and then everything's going to be fine. Not realizing the fact that it's still extremely wrong. You can't undo the fact that he ripped off all the people in the past and there's going to be no penalty for it at all.
Right.
And again, citing a source doesn't mean plagiarism is good. It just isn't. That'd be like, okay, I take a book and I just do an audio version of the book and it's mine now.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
It's not transformative. That's not how it works. That's not fair use.
No, turning text into a video is not right. You're not making it your own thing.
Absolutely not. I can't take the script from Captain America Civil War and read it on YouTube. That's still copyright infringement.
Yeah.
You can't do it. It's not mine. So, Boogie2988 got a lot of backlash for that video because it seemed like he was supporting Matthew Santoro. And honestly, when I watched it, it seemed like he was tiptoeing around it, but it seemed like he was trying to say, yeah, everything's cool. It's not a big deal. So, he had to put out a second video basically saying he doesn't want to talk. Boogie2988 doesn't want to talk about drama anymore, and he's done with it, and he won't talk about. He apologized to Matthew Santoro. He apologized to PewDiePie, Markiplier, or anyone else that could have been drama-related. I forget if he apologized to the Fine Brothers in there. I hope he didn't, because there's no reason to. So, we're in a state now where you have YouTubers that are huge, that are now coming out and saying drama channels are bad, for whatever reason, whether they don't want to be spotlighted on themselves or don't want their friends to be spotlighted. But now you have other bigger YouTubers that seem to be, for one reason or another, unwilling or afraid to call out other big YouTubers for bullshit that they're doing. Because they either know them or afraid that if they call out, and Boogie2988 said in his video, I don't want other YouTubers to look at me like that, they have to be afraid of me because I might talk about stuff they're doing. Which I understand. Because sometimes with us, I feel like we could get into that situation at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Or someone we know is doing something shitty. That if we talk about it, then maybe they'll look at us in a different way or be afraid to say, oh, maybe Pat and Ian will talk about us. But what I'm going to say, though, is this. Is that if people do bad shit, you have to call out. You have to call them out on it.
Yeah, you can't let fucking fucked up stuff slide.
Especially when it's YouTube. And YouTube's still in this infancy where there is no self-policing being done, really. And this is the start of it. Guys like H3H3 going off on prank channels. Guys like Grade A talking about reaction videos and how awful they are. Or in this case, talking about Matthew Santoro and alleged plagiarism of other people's work. This is important. People have to know this stuff is happening. People had to have known what the Fine Brothers were trying to do,
right.
What they were doing. It's important work to be done. And the bigger voice you have, I feel you have a bigger responsibility to let that be known. Now, if you want to say, well, it's not worth it for me because the potential drama and people, I understand that. But I'm just going to say this then. I'm disappointed. I'm just disappointed. Because we don't have that as big a voice of people like Boogie or Grade A. And I feel like if those people aren't the ones saying it, then it doesn't matter. You can get away with it, and there's no justice. I hate to say it.
Yeah.
It's sad.
And you don't have... The thing about it is you don't have to let it devolve into schoolyard drama. You can call something out for being bullshit and then not carry it on over weeks and months.
Sure.
You can call something out, and you can walk away from it, but you need to still bring it to the attention of people so they know. That doesn't mean that you have to keep dipping back into it.
Sure.
But you should call it out.
I think
you have a responsibility.
You have a responsibility. And I hate it gets to the point where, well, I don't want to offend bigger YouTubers. Then what is it, an oligarchy then at that point? You got to be afraid of people at the top, and they can get away with whatever they can.
Right.
At that point, that's what it sounds like. So not to get into more about Manti Santoro, but I've heard other things about him that are not pleasing. We'll just say. Allegedly, he was at VidCon and was during a panel talking about the panel was, let's see. Not sure the name of the panel, but basically he said in a panel with other edutainment YouTubers that that Manti Santoro said it was okay being wrong with information in the video, and that the research he did was scant, and that it was up to the audiences to figure out what was the truth or not.
No, it's BS. They come to you looking for truthful information.
And supposedly at this panel, which it seems like there's no video evidence of, since Manti Santoro had a vlog of it himself, then took it down off his Instagram.
That's incriminating.
People on the panel disagreed with him about it. So if anyone out there has this panel, sounds like it was from VidCon with Manti Santoro, I'd love to see it, because it'd be another piece of incriminating evidence to show you the modus operandi of what he's doing. But again, I gotta be afraid of him now because I'm pointing out something wrong. No, I don't agree with that. I think here's the problem. Again, with self-policing, like comedian self-police. If you're a hack comedian, if you steal, you are run out of the community.
Yep.
But for a while, though, there was one big comedian that got away with it. There was actually two for a while. One to a lesser degree, though. But the bigger one was Carlos Mencia.
Yeah.
So Carlos Mencia was stealing jokes from several comedians. And he was rising in popularity year after year. He had a big show on Comedy Central. Remember at the Chappelle show?
Yeah, Mind of Mencia.
They slid in Mind of Mencia basically in the same slot. It was on for like 4 years. And it was the same sort of, you know, humor, you know, racial, but more Mexican, Hispanic. And he was huge. He was the biggest probably comedian for like 2, 3, 4 years. And no one was talking about this guy being a joke stealer. But finally, Joe Rogan, only guy, stood up. And Joe Rogan was a guy at that time, wasn't the biggest comedian. He was doing UFC stuff. He was coming off of that the series on NBC. I forget. He was doing the reality show as well, off Fear Factor. Rogan, he spoke up, and he could have got crushed.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why other comedians said, I don't want to cross Carlos Mencia. He's got a lot of sway. But Rogan pounded on it and said, this guy, you're a joke stealer. You don't deserve anything that you have. I'm going to talk about it. And eventually, it stuck.
Yeah.
And eventually, Mencia...
He's
nowhere to be found anymore. His show, after those stuff was gone, other comedians finally said, you know what? I'm going to stand with Joe Rogan and say, oh, yeah, you used to steal my jokes for years, but I was afraid to talk about it. And Mencia is now supposedly a guy who goes to therapy about this stuff, which, hate to say it, you did it. You stole the jokes. You got your money. You got to live with it.
Right.
So the point is that it's not drama if people are doing shitty stuff and you call them out on it.
Sure. You have to. It's not drama. It's policing.
If people in the community harass GameStop employees, we're going to talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
We will.
Yep.
Well, I don't care about the repercussions.
Never going to fucking stop.
So, that's what it comes down to. Sorry to say. So, I hope, Boogie, if you're out there, I didn't want this to sound harsh because I do like what you do, but I hope you reconsider and figure out the difference between self-policing that should be done on YouTube and saying no more drama, because there is a difference. And when people do really bad stuff, you need bigger spotlights to come on to it. All right, Q&A time.
All right.
On the CU podcast.
This is from Nixa Music. Will there be any interest in our NES collections in 100 years?
No.
Yeah, I don't... I agree. I have a feeling... I mean, we've talked about this before, but... Just like I feel like investing in this stuff is a very short-sighted thing. In years, yes, this is not going to be something that is going to interest a wide variety of people, I don't think.
I'm trying to think of a parallel.
Me too. I'm trying as well, but like, I don't know, a Tin Soldier collection?
I was going to go with the older, remember before the records they had this, the cans that were playing?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
On the old Edison phonographs from like 1910,
mm-hmm.
1908. Physical media is going to mean less and less as generations go by.
Yeah.
You already see it disappearing now. Yeah, they still sell Blu-rays with DVDs packed in. But do you honestly think in 20, 30 years people are going to be bothering with Blu-rays? I don't see it. It's all going to be digital download. Mm-hmm. People are already turning off of cable and just doing Netflix. You know, they're already done with that. They're already... So Netflix is just all... You know, you imagine yourself buying a TV box set anymore? I got 4 seasons of Scrubs on DVD that I will never watch again that are collecting dust.
Sure.
Yeah. There's no need for it.
Nope.
Hulu Plus, Amazon Prime, Netflix. You can get it all.
There's very little that I will own on DVD, and it just has to be something that I really, really like. And, I mean, you know, there probably are people who still, I can't remember what the fucking called, who want those cylinders. There probably are people who
yes.
want those tin
antique
soldiers.
Collectors.
But no, there is not going to be this interest like there is now. People are going to look at this like, I don't know, any other toys that have fallen by the wayside that people have no interest in. I just don't see it. There's going to be interest in the history of video games, but there's going to be less interest in the actual holding on of holding on to the cart.
Especially since when you think about it, like all this stuff's going to be backed up. I mean, it already is on emulators and downloadable titles on, you know, the 20th iteration of whatever the NX is going to be 100 years from now. So they're all going to be somewhere,
right?
They're all going to be playable. They're all going to, you know what I mean? All the copyrights are going to be expired in all these games too. So it's all going to be legal to own them all on... someone can come out with something where, you know, 100 years from now, all these games are legal on my home console. It'll be a little mini Nintendo. A mini Nintendo with a little flat, and it goes to your holographic TV, and it'll cost you 25 scruples, whatever the currency is going to be. You know what I mean? But the point is that the copyright won't matter in 100 years on any of this stuff. Physical media will be dead or dying. It'll be like those weirdos that want to go retro. We want to go back to the early 2000s and how they lived. You know what I mean? Like, it'll be like this weird thing.
Yes.
Just thinking about what I'll be like 100 years from now, if I'd be into that or not or what. You know what I'm saying? So
you're going to want a two-way pager.
So I'm going to say before you turn 140 years old, you might want to sell your collection off because it's
yeah.
It won't have the same value.
No.
Except for, well... NWC probably will be like that one relic, but maybe. Stadium events? Hopefully not.
No.
All right. This is from at MF Snakes MF Plane. Oh, I see. Motherfucking Snakes, motherfucking Plane. That's actually funny. Do you notice a difference between retro collectors of different systems? I collect for Dreamcast and noticed a scene for some.
Yes, I do notice differences, although I have to say that I noticed differences between collectors, a lot more, you know, say 5-10 years ago. You had your arcade junkies who, you know, loved the Dreamcast. You have, people who are a bit more obsessed, I think, with collecting full sets, with the NES. You have your... You know, collectors who are doing it because, you know, it's the one system they had and they were kind of the outsider with the Master System. You see mm-hmm. people who were collecting TurboGrafx, not because they had the TurboGrafx, but a lot of people because it, to them, was uncharted territory that no one touched. I feel like as time goes on, though, and more people are exposed to these consoles, I feel like it does become a little homogenized. I'm not going to say that there's not differences in collectors. Sega collectors, to me, definitely seem to be a little bit more about playing games, whereas your Nintendo collectors seem... And I'm not trying to say all, or I'm not trying to generalize entirely. I'm just trying to speak from where I sit behind the counter. You know, your Nintendo collectors are going to be more... picky about condition and things like that. I have a lot more Genesis collectors who are like, I don't care if it's loose or box, I just want to play it.
Yeah. I would say if you want to talk about collectors that are more likely to actually play their games, yeah, I would probably lean towards the Sega folks, Master System, Genesis, TurboGrafx 16, they will play those games.
Sure.
They got to seek out those games, pay a lot of money for them. They're probably going to play them, more than likely. The NES... has this sort of negative now connotation saying you collect NES because it's such a vast library and because it's probably in terms of value, it's the highest monetarily of all the retro games, you know, pound for pound.
Sure.
And the fact that it's so varied and hard to collect for versus the other systems, aside from those like handful of Atari 2600 games, there's like 5 that exist, but you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
That it draws that type of collector that it's like the biggest challenge.
Sure.
To go for that. And so to complete an NES collection is like, you complete a Sega Master System collection, so what? Even a Super Nintendo, it's like, is it that hard, really? But the challenge, the draw, there's this sort of like, you get put on a pedestal, I think, with the NES. So I'd say overall, the NES collectors, they are less likely to play their games. I've seen it myself. I've seen it.
Sure. I mean, when you're buying that many games, and honestly, when two-thirds of the library is probably dodgy.
Well, half, according to a certain NES guidebook.
I feel like you were a little soft. Anyways.
I was a little soft on some of my interviews?
Yes, yeah.
Really? Which one was I soft on?
I just feel like overall you erred on the side of overlooking minor things.
So you would have maybe given a half star less on some?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. But let's just say...
That hurts Ian.
Not really. It's not controversy. It's opinion. And everyone's allowed to have one.
I only gave 2 stars to Ice Climber.
Oof. I like that game.
See? Was I too soft there?
No. Well, yeah. No, you were too harsh there.
What would you give it? 2.5?
I'd give it 2.5. It's really the only thing I don't like about Ice Climber is the jumping.
But that's the whole game, though.
But you get used to it. It's just something that in your brain.
But the entire gimmick of the difficulty is built on the bad jumping mechanic. That's
fair enough.
So
whatever.
So that's where you were too soft. Anyway, that's an aside. For more on Ice Climber, go read Ultimate Nintendo Guide to the NES Library, available digital download right now at ultimatenes.com. Sorry, what were we saying?
next question. This is from Flock Member 37. Please talk about the recent WWE firings.
Okay.
I don't know these, so you
they hadn't done a big Black Friday of firing since 2 years ago when they got rid of like 10 guys. They got rid of like 8 people recently. They got rid of the, what was her name? Cameron, who was one of the Funkadactyls. She was terrible.
Yeah.
Remember Naomi and Cameron was the other one?
Yeah.
I think she won in NXT somehow. Oh, no, she was the first one gone from NXT that year, but they still signed her. So they got rid of her. They got rid of some other folks where I was like, you know, honestly, so what? I can't remember them right now, who most of them were. I'll bring them up. But the one person they got rid of that really fucking annoyed me was Damian Sandow.
I loved that guy.
Damian Sandow was a guy that wrestled in other regions, went to Puerto Rico, I think in Mexico too. Really try to hone his craft before coming to the WWE. So he comes to the WWE. They give him a fucking throwback gimmick. Like, basically a mix between... It was the Genius. Mix between the Genius and... What was it? Matt Stryker, like the teacher. You know. Where he's a know-it-all. He wears the robe. You know. He holds the microphone like a goblet.
Yep.
Excuse me! Like, trying to educate the masses and how stupid they are. And he threw himself behind the gimmick, and it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And it was entertaining, and it got over. Somehow, it got over when it should exist.
Because it shouldn't have.
It shouldn't have, because it should have been a gimmick from, like, 91.
Yep.
And he got it over. So not only did he get it over, he put on some good matches. He was very solid in the ring. He was good with ring psychology. Yeah. I remember watching matches with him taking on Sheamus that were like 15-minute matches, like on SmackDown, I think, where Sandow got in most of the offense in the match and was really working body parts and was really putting together a good match. But this is a guy with an awful gimmick that's doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So they had confidence with him at one point, so much so that he won the Money in the Bank a couple of years ago. People forget.
Yep.
He won the Money in the Bank, which at one point meant you were guaranteed to be either WWE champion or World Heavyweight Champion. But unfortunately, they must have soured on him because he was the first guy to win the briefcase that fucking lost it. First or second. Well, John Cena won it and lost it. John Cena was the only guy that cashed in and lost it. But Sandow lost it to Cena, who was champion at the time. And it was unfortunate because that was the beginning of his burial, because Cena in kayfabe was injured, could barely come out, and still beat Damian Sandow. So at that point, Sandow, you know, went downhill. He was put in a very entertaining tag team with Cody Rhodes as Rhodes Scholars. I remember that. It was better than it should have been.
Yes.
Obviously.
Everything he did was better than it should have been. Which then, speaks to his talent.
And then, of course, They saddle him as a sidekick with Miz and make him an impersonator, Miz Dow, which again got way over.
Yep.
It was hysterical. It was funny. It was a bullshit gimmick that any other wrestler would have been insulted with, but he made it his own, and people fucking loved him.
Yep.
But then, of course, that goes nowhere. He did a quick feud with The Miz, and after that, he disappears. Then he comes back with Curtis Axel. They try to do the Axel Mania thing, where one was Hogan, the other one was a Savage. But then when Hogan got in trouble, they did that. Then they sent him away again. And then he was basically off TV for the past, like, 9 months, basically.
I don't even remember the Axel Mania stuff, honestly.
It was like 3 weeks. They just said promos. I don't think they wrestled. Okay. But then he came back like 3 weeks ago on a throwaway Raw thing where I forget what it even was, but it was one of those things where he wasn't even introduced, you know, coming down. It was like already at ringside, at the ring. It was just a setup like the competitor getting waylaid by someone. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? One of those sort of
things. Yeah.
So they introduced Damian Sandow, though. He got a huge pop. Like, it was like, oh my God, it's Damian Sandow. We remember we love this guy. And Sandow was like this, like, yeah, you guys like me. And then they let him go, and it's like, What point do you realize that a guy is overachieving and that you should keep a guy or at least reward him or do something with him?
He didn't bulk. I mean, as far as we know, he didn't bulk at any of the bullshit gimmicks you settled them with. In fact, he threw everything he had behind him and made, as we've already stated, gimmicks that should never have worked work in his favor.
Yeah, it was the same thing that they did with the three-man band. They were getting over.
Yep.
And they got rid of two of them. Jinder Mahal and McIntyre, who's now like the TNA champion, or one of them. You know. Just really fucking weird. And it's just, every time this happens, I'm just really glad that I'm not a pro wrestler. Besides the fact that, you know, it kills your body. But the fact that it doesn't even sound like if you're good at what you do, you can be successful. There's so many weird political machinations.
It's all politics.
And politics that I probably would not want to do or be involved with. Oh, they got rid of El Torito. They got rid of Hornswoggle. They weren't using either of them. That makes sense. But supposedly there's more firings to come. Supposedly Ryback's going to be one. Believe it or not, it's rumored that they're starting to slash his merchandise. Because supposedly he spoke out about McMahon about he wanted... I don't like Ryback as a wrestler, really. I don't like him as a person, from what I've heard.
No, I don't like Ryback at all.
But from this, he has a point. But it's unfortunate because whenever you try this, you get stomped on. Reportedly, he went to McMahon and said, I really think wrestlers should be paid, compensated for their hotel. Which they should.
Yes.
But they're not, which is bullshit. And, of course, that's never going to happen because, you know, why? You know, that's too much money to give out. So Ryback's going to be gone, too. They're probably going to get rid of guys like, I'm guessing guys like Swagger, they'll get rid of.
Yeah, he's done.
The Ascension have gone nowhere.
Right.
Fandango, they brought up back recently to try to do something with, but he was like one-note gimmick who had his day in the sun a couple years ago. Social Outcasts have gone nowhere, really.
I don't even know who they are.
Adam Rose, I think, was suspended for some sort of drugs, but he maintains it was something medical. So he might be on the outs, even though Randy Orton failed like 75 drug tests. So, yeah, whatever. Another reason why I don't like watching wrestling, because it's just depressing when you see the good guys of the business get shit on and don't go anywhere. All right. At Pieces of Bits, would Wii U have been successful with Super Mario Maker, Smash Brothers, or Mario Kart as a launch title?
I definitely think it would have moved more units with something big along those lines at launch. Especially if you want to just dream, if you had Super Mario Maker, Smash Brothers, and Mario Kart as launch titles, yeah, it certainly would have moved a lot more units. Nintendo does have an issue, and they have for quite some time now, with having a launch lineup that entices people. The same thing happened with the 3DS, to the point where they had to slash the price of the system to get it into people's hands and give away a boatload of free games to placate the people who bought it early on. But the issue is, Nintendo is obsessed with quality. Their products, their games are generally synonymous with it, especially their big name games, especially things like Super Mario, Smash Brothers, and Mario Kart. When a system is in its infancy, when it's launched, yes, they've had dev kits for a while and they can work with it, but they're not able to necessarily put out the most polished product. And I think that's something that people often forget when they wonder, well, why didn't you just put Smash out with the system when it came out? It would have moved units. Yeah, but it probably would not have been nearly as polished or as near perfect of a game as it is now. Same thing with Mario Kart. They need those games to come out in the middle of the system's lifespan when they've really perfected the polish on their product.
The marketing was abysmal for the Wii U.
Sure.
I think there was maybe one set of commercials I saw for like a 2-3 week period, like around that like November of 2012, around Thanksgiving. So I think they already shot themselves in the foot, which we know with the bad name.
Yes.
Like calling it the Wii U. But people are like, what is this, a Wii extension? Even the first E3, I wasn't sure in 2011 when they first announced it, what the fuck it was. Was this an add-on? It looks the same color. It's the same shape. You know, like, what is this? So I think, yes, having one launch title that was decent, besides what New Super Mario Bros. Was like the only good one they had, right?
Yeah.
That was exclusive. Zombie U?
Zombie U was good, and it was exclusive at the time, but it's not going to move the system.
Yeah, obviously it would have helped to have something more. Because after, remember, Super Mario Bros. Wii U, what was the next big one that came out?
Probably Super Mario 3D World, which was...
Another 6 months?
I don't even know when that came out, which was also a very good game, but it was still, you know, just a kind of a sort of reiteration, with some differences, of a 3DS game. Like, it didn't exactly feel like a full-blown Mario game.
Yeah, I brought this up in the Pat Solo podcast, the Patcast, was, again, why Nintendo really is, I think, going to be more careful with the NX and why Legend of Zelda is going to be a launch title, because they have to have a good launch. Like, this has to go better than the Wii U. This has to succeed. This can't even be, like, GameCube level of success. It has to be above that.
Right.
Not saying it has to be Wii level, but it has to be a lot better than what the Wii U was. So they're going to have probably at least another good launch title for that. And, yeah, you can't survive on just one decent game every 6 months on your system. You know, first party, you got to do a little bit better. And yeah, they learned their lesson, but we'll see what happens going forward. But yeah, it would have helped, obviously, as Ian said, but I think you would have ended up in the same place if it was the same amount.
Yeah, I mean, it's very possible.
You would have just had more out of the gate, but then when a game like, say, Mario Kart comes out in the beginning, the one happens 2 years in.
Right.
You don't have that big game then. Like, what are you going to slide in?
You've got people selling off their systems, which is why so many people never ended up playing really good games on the Wii, like Super Mario Galaxy 2, because by then, myself included, I had looked at my Wii and said, I don't fucking need this anymore, and got rid of it before some of the great later titles for the system came out.
Sure. All right, and this is at Buff985. He's the buff, and he's the stuff. The girls can't get enough. If flash carts existed when you started collecting, would your collections be the same size?
It's tough to say. I think if flash carts had existed when I started collecting NES, I think my collection, or at least my attempt at my collection, which I think was, you know, close to 500 games or so by the time I stopped. I think it probably would have been the same. I was kind of obsessed with the physical media of it. I liked going to flea markets and finding them and buying them. Also in my head, I mean, emulation existed, but I was already of the belief that I wanted to play the original cartridges on the original hardware. So I don't think it really would have affected, say, my Nintendo collection if they had existed at that time. I would have looked at them as a novelty. I probably would have owned one. I probably would have used it to test out what games I wanted to buy next, but I probably would have continued to buy games. And at that point in time, I did kind of want a full set. I would have ended up buying everything. It's your mentality. However, a good example of the opposite is I got very, very close to getting back into Genesis collecting again about 2-3 years ago. I really started to miss a lot of my Genesis games, and I really wanted to play a lot of them again. And I had missed, you know, that was a collection that I didn't even really sell off before I moved. It was a collection that an entire collection. I don't know what happened. I don't want to insinuate a friend stole it, but it disappeared. I mean, most of it just fucking vanished. I have no idea what happened. It's never turned back up. That was one where, like, right as I'm about to kind of, like, start buying up Genesis games again, and I did, I had a few, I learned about the EverDrive. And I said, I looked around my apartment, and I looked at the available space, and I said, No, the EverDrive is where I'm going to go. And I did. So, I mean, it depends on, I think, where you are in your life. It depends on what you want out of your collection. Are you playing? Are you collecting for a whole set? But, yeah, two various points in my life, I think it would have been very different. If they existed during the NES era of me collecting, it wouldn't have affected anything. But it definitely affected what I chose to do with Genesis.
Yeah, this question to me is almost, you can also answer it and interchange emulation.
Sure.
I know with Flash Crush you're using the real hardware, but still, with emulation, all the games are at your fingertips, too.
Yeah, that's what I touched on. I mean, like, it was
kind of
the same.
And that's what got me and you into collecting in the first place. So I think if Flash Cars existed, I think I'd still go out to the flea markets, like you said. I'd still go out and try to find those 40 NES games for $20 at English Town Flea Market.
Mm-hmm.
And realize that, oh, I already have 8 of these. Now I already have doubles. I better start tracking these. I used to bring a printed out list of my games, right? Like, you know, write them down. I think with collecting, there's such of it, at least 15 years ago, even now when you go to the flea market, you know, it's less likely to find good deals. There's such a thrill of the hunt aspect to it and not knowing what you're going to discover. You know, well, you know, maybe I'll find this box Game Boy game that I would never thought of getting, but now it's in front of my face. So flash cards or emulation don't affect that at all, that sort of feeling to me.
No.
That feeling of discovery, of knowing what's out there. And yes, there's cool artwork on these game cards. It looks cool to have it. It's like, yeah, Ian, if you knew that MP3s existed, would you buy CDs or records? It's the same thing.
Yeah.
You still would.
Right. I mean, I always collected records of dance music because of DJing, but I got heavy into other sorts of record collecting well after. I mean, you could get any album within 2 minutes of, you know, turning on your computer.
Sure.
You know, that didn't dissuade me. It's how important is that collection to you? How important is that physical media?
Absolutely. So we'll see what happens in that 100 years from now.
Yeah.
When our collections won't matter anymore, and if people then are just, you have nice flashcards. It'd be like a rotisserie of flashcards on your holographic
right.
screen or something that you'll have to play all your
a holographic flashcard will be a fake one. You just touch the Genesis cartridge and...
Holographic controllers. You don't even need the controllers anymore.
No, that sounds awful. I need feedback.
You need the feedback?
Yeah.
We won't figure that out in the holodeck?
Yeah, we might. There was feedback.
I never got that with the holodeck.
Yeah, but I want it to exist.
Absolutely, I want it to exist, but I don't understand, like, how can you get killed in the holodeck? It's like being killed in, like, a Nightmare on Elm Street dream to me.
Right.
It's like, what are we talking about?
Fiction.
Okay.
That's the end of the podcast.
That's the end of the CU podcast. If you'd like to be a sponsor for the CU podcast and hopefully not have us mangle your live read, you can email us cupodcast@thepunkeffect.com. There's also a Patreon where you can watch the entire video of us with our awkward transitions and intros and stuff that doesn't make the cut for YouTube. And that's patreon.com/...
Pixel Sickle.
Pixel Sickle.
PXLSICLE.
It's so easy to remember. And the book, Ultimate Nintendo Guide to NES Library, you can still pre-order at ultimatenes.com. Shipping this summer. Digital ones out now. And that's all for this CU podcast. Ian's holding back another yawn with his nostrils.
So sleepy.
For Ian Ferguson.
Goodbye.
I'm Pat Contry. Now we're going to go goodbye. Goodbye.